This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Back to another episode of So It and Pop Network. I can't believe that they've just decided this great idea of giving us our own PTN network. I mean, this is a great day. This is a great day for all of you who are listening to this. Not only have I not been canceled, I'm here to rave about all sorts of things all over again. And since you've come back, you are a glutton for this punishment. So, hey, I'm glad to have you on. I'm glad to have my guest this week on this special edition of Selling Comics, which they're all special. So let's talk about what this edition is going to be about. This edition is going to be about everything DC. And after 1.5 months, we've kind of gotten a good taste of what all of this is about. And I'm pretty sure that most of the people on this panel today with me are big fans of it, just like me. So, with that, I'm going to introduce my panel, starting first with the young lady who is making her Sellers Points debut. You've heard her on Hard Traveling Fanboys. It's Miss Jennifer Smith.
Yay! Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I'm so excited.
I'm excited to have you on. What I'd like you to tell folks is a little bit about you. Like, how did you come to be a comics fan? Like, what got you interested in reading DC Comics? And recap for the people where you first appeared on Place to Be Nation.
For DC Comics, I would say that points back to Batman. Batman is my favorite. I can't say enough good things about Batman. For Place to Be Nation, I was on Hard Traveling Fanboys. We did along with Coach Hunter's edition of Green Lantern Rebirth. And, I'm just coming to this, especially as a newbie. I've not really read comic books that much in the past. I've always been a fan of superheroes, but comic books is a new thing for me. Rebirth is pretty much my introduction into a lot of characters. The Batman animated series when I was young, that's what I watched a lot, along with the X-Men. As far as DC, Rebirth is for me. I'm really digging it where I'm at.
Excellent. We are very happy to have you back on. And for those who may be curious, we're doing this podcast a little bit differently than what we've done in the past, which is to say, all of us are in the same room. And that may be shocking to some of our regular listeners. I know it's shocking for me, because this is something we don't normally do. Normally, whenever we record these lovely little episodes, we're all in very different places. I'm off in Montgomery, Greg down in Dothan, Alabama. Of course, Jennifer's in Dothan as well, but now tonight, I'm going to give a big old plug to the wonderful local comic shop that allowed us to come and record this podcast. We are at Fanatics in Dothan, recording at a wonderful little spot, which is the local comic shop actually for Jennifer and for Greg. And the owner, Philip Chalker, was very gracious to let us record this episode here, since we were all in town at the same time. And it just seemed like a good idea. It seemed like something that would be fun to do. And speaking of people here in Dothan, I got my old homeboy, who was on episode 1 of Sellers Points, hasn't been on the show since, because he was like Jesus Christ, I can't believe I did that. I mean, it was such a big regret for him. I had to convince him to come back, and you guys don't want to know what I had to do in order to make this happen, because it was something that I'm not proud of. And something that if my mother knew what I did, she would be ashamed. She would disown
Favors
me.
Were exchanged.
That's putting it nicely. And I think we'll keep it less than graphic. And if you guys have listened to the most recent Hard Traveling Fanboys episode, you know what kind of pace these guys like to go at with their graphic talk. So, with that said, Greg Phillips, welcome back to the program.
Hello, Russell. It's my honor to be here for you today, and I'm happy to be here as part of the network here. And you can catch my ramblings every week in the Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast. And I'd like to make one correction, sir. Mention that I am Dothan, Alabama. That is actually incorrect. We record every week, as everyone knows, in the luxurious Hard Traveling Fanboys studios in beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Thank you very much.
Well, I stand corrected. I had forgotten about that. The move.
A lot of travel miles are logged, Russell, to get from there to my job on Mondays.
It's true, but it is so much cheaper to film there and to record there, as I understand it. Yes,
like no taxes.
Word. That is the. I mean, how can you argue with that? You can't. You're just going to move to Vancouver. You're going to record there, and life is just going to be good for everyone. But the point of this lovely podcast is to get to the big deal that we're all like so emotionally invested in. That wasn't a jump in the digital screen. That was actually my tongue like slapping against the roof of my mouth and not at the right time. So
you have to forgive us, folks. It's been about 15 years since Russell and I have called the Open Championship when Whipper Billy won by defeating Tiger Woods on the 18th hole.
That won't be the last golf reference that's made in this, because before we started recording the podcast, we were watching the Golf Channel. Not that we had much choice, it's what was on at the restaurant.
Thrilling competition there. On the lakes.
It did kind of look like one of their announcers might have just gone through the apocalypse. So that's kind of what...
He did not look well.
He looked very disheveled. I was worried about him and his poor wife and children. But this first segment that we're going to get to is the points of fact. Isn't this the fun part? Oh, that's Greg's favorite part. I mean, he's looking at me very suggestively. I mean, you guys should see his eyebrows right now.
If I could have a sound effect, eyebrows going rank, 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 up and down, and like a cartoon effect, that's a more like a chop sound. Never mind. Carry on.
Anyway, this will be the only part of the show where we mention anything about Marvel. Yeah, it's going to be shocking to everybody. Oh my God, this is a DC podcast. But anyway, the point that I kind of wanted to get to was, you know, this is something I think that Greg and I can comment on. Doctor Doom is about to take over the Iron Man role, and yeah, we all know about he's bringing out his Doom bots. He's going to be the Doom bot. But I think I'm on board with this idea. Like with Dr. Doom kind of taking over for Tony for a little bit. I mean, I have no idea what's about to happen to him, but I kind of dig this idea of trying something different. I mean, we already knew about, Riri Williams taking over the other, the Invincible Iron Man book, and Dr. Doom is going to be the infamous Iron Man. So, Greg, what are your thoughts on the idea of Dr. Doom kind of stepping into this role, the bad guy becoming the hero?
I am of two minds about it, Russell. On the one hand, it isn't terribly original. We've seen this done in Spider-Man. We've seen it done in Superman. We've seen it done in many characters where the villains take over the heroic role. However, I do find this one intriguing for the reason that Dr. Doom traditionally has hid his face behind a mask and from a villainous standpoint. Now we're going to have him hiding his mask, or hiding his face behind a mask, rather, from a heroic standpoint, or an attempted heroic standpoint, perhaps. Perhaps a kind of a Lex Luthor thing where he might actually have good intentions here. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. So I kind of like it. I mean, Dr. Doom is one of the best villainous characters that Marvel has. Iron Man is one of the most prominent heroic roles that Marvel has. So kind of crossing the two together, I think it's going to be cool. It also gets Dr. Doom further away from the Fantastic Four, which I view as a good thing. Another topic for another time. But Dr. Doom. Dr. Doom needs to be established as a big deal again. This will help him do that. So I'm a big fan of it. I think this is a good. I think it's gonna be a good book. I think Bendis is writing this.
Yes.
I think he's gonna do a good job. I think the direction is going to be interesting, and I look forward to seeing where it goes.
I'm all in. I mean, everybody knows that I read my Marvel books by Marvel Unlimited instead of buying them in print. But whenever I heard about that and that Bendis was going to continue telling the story, I thought, well, I'm going to add this to my queue as soon as it's available.
And wonderful app, by the way.
Yes. Ben Morse, if you're listening, there's your plug. I expect my check in the mail within 2 weeks.
Hey, what about mine?
You were our volunteer help. This podcast, sorry, buddy.
That's fine.
I can't split profits, man. I can't afford it. I got rent to pay too.
I was a newsman for 8 years, so I'm just doing volunteer for it.
People who work at Greg's former employer, they didn't hear that.
They know.
They can't lie. Jennifer, what are your thoughts on Tony Stark taking a backseat, possibly maybe dying, and someone else taking over the role for a while?
Well, I am Team Iron Man. I love Tony Stark. But, you know, change is always good. We'll see what happens. I like me some Tony Stark, though. I don't know. I'm not reading any Marvel stuff right now, so it's hard for me to comment. But, you know, I'm good. If it's a chick, you know.
Yeah,
on one of the titles, I'm good with that.
Yeah, Riri Williams is going to be the new...
Yeah, girl power.
And who doesn't dig Tony Stark? Tony Stark's the man.
I mean, he's the best.
Yeah, I mean, this is a... And that's right, folks. You didn't realize this when you started listening to a DC Rebirth panel. You in a room full of Team Iron Man right now.
Exactly.
As it should be. Everybody in this room knows that Tony Stark was right. There it is. I'm channeling my inner Tim Capel right now. There's your shout-out, Tim. We'll have you back on to discuss the finer points of why Cyclops was right, part 3. At which time
Tim and I will debate that again. Or debate. We can debate.
You guys have never.
Says Cyclops. Next time.
So you guys have never debated on my show, but I'm going to get both of you on so it can be a master debate, and I can just sit back, drink, and enjoy you guys just ranting.
I think Tim and I were separated at birth anyway, so...
There is a possibility of this.
You just said master debate, so I'm just...
That's true.
Well, I'm glad everybody picked up on it.
Master debate is cool. It's all I became.
Let's not do the Ghostbusters thing and explain our jokes. Sorry, that was my one shot. And for those of you who are curious, or if you're looking around... I did review the new Ghostbusters movie for Place to Be Nation, and you can find that review at placetobenation.com.
The only place to be.
In your pop culture world. Isn't it great that we've got that down now?
That's right.
Rosero would be so proud.
We gotta get Rosero.
I gotta get him on the show sometime, just to rant and rave. I just want to hear him go on a rant about something. I don't even care what it is.
His rants are the best.
He can sit here and rant to me about the proper color of a unicorn. I'm gonna sit there and just be entertained.
It's pink, by the way.
Uh-oh, here we go. Here comes the battle.
No love for blue.
None.
Sorry. Unicorns equals.
You know what? If the lady says so, I'm just going to let that one go. Because it might as well be. I'm not an authority on that. I just, I may drink and know things, but I concentrate on the drinking. So, with that little bit of Marvel out of the way, let's get that shit out of here. That's enough. This is a DC show, for fuck's sake. I didn't come here to talk about Marvel. That was last episode. If you guys want that, boy, you come to the wrong spot.
Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey,
don't make me miss Nate Dogg right now. You're going to make me start crying. I'm serious about that. I really miss it. But anyway, it's been 1 month.
Dude, I was about to do it. I was about to do it. You do it. You saw the business. Grinning.
I did. I had to stop him. I was like, no, no, Greg, this is my moment. Don't you dare take this from me. When do I get to put bare naked ladies in anything?
Well,
that's not a euphemism, by the way.
Oh, boy.
But anyway, it has indeed been a month and a half since Rebirth launched. And people are going to start referring to me as the Michael Cole of our little comic staff, which means I'll be fired in a week.
Oh.
That's all right. They can't all be Corey Graves.
The gauntlet has been thrown.
And with that, we'll move on.
Say yes and we'll move on.
Anyway, it's been a month since Rebirth launched, and to much fanfare, like it was a huge return to form for DC. It was something that I think a lot of us have been kind of clamoring for. It spoke to a lot of fans on that kind of visceral level of what made classic DC great. What did we love about it? What did we like come into it for? I mean, Wally West kind of embodied that. And having him center stage in DC Universe Rebirth number one really worked for me on that level, even though I don't personally have that much emotional connection to Wally, because I was never a huge Flash fan. That kind of changed for me in the New 52 when Barry came back. I started reading it more adamantly then. Don't look at me like that.
Oh, I'm not. I'm raising my eyes.
I wish you folks could see Greg whenever he cocks an eyebrow at me, because it looks almost exactly like Dwayne Johnson's. He's got the eyebrow down. He's doing it right now.
One day I'll look like him, too.
All you got to do is like shave the rest of your head.
Not a thing, my friend.
Just shave your head and finish the job that life has started.
The Greg's?
Yes. But anyway, Rebirth was a kind of a revelation to me, because Greg, you know that I was even as a longtime DC fan, I was a big fan of the New 52. I liked what it represented, what it was trying to do, even if it did admittedly misstep on a few points. But DC Universe Rebirth kind of reminded me of what it was we were missing. It kind of brought all of that to the forefront, and all of a sudden it's very clear to me that the New 52 was kind of falling short in some things. What was it for you? Like, what hit for you out of Rebirth?
Well, I think as our hero and master, Jeff Johns, has indicated in interviews, I think much of it was, first of all, Legacy was a hallmark in many ways of the DC Universe. When I was a kid, I loved Marvel, and I loved DC, but I viewed them as separate but equal entities. Marvel specialized in the kind of down-to-earth story of one hero, one person's journey, and how they react to the world around them. DC was the story of legacy, characters that were allowed to grow and evolve and have second and third and fourth generations, multiple iterations of the character. You know, with Flash, you had, you know, Jay and Barry and Molly, and then Bart, even Green Lantern, of course, all the countless Green Lanterns there are. Pretty sure you and I have worn the Green Lantern ring at one point or another. And, you know, or even Superman, you had Kal-El, Superboy, you know, you had this idea that there was a living, breathing universe that was evolving, that had evolved since the 1940s. Whereas in Marvel, it was a little more static. It was more the, not static, but stale, just the characters are who they are. Captain America's Steve Rogers, Spider-Man's Parker, etc. And I feel like the one thing that 52 took away from us was that idea of evolution, the idea that these relationships that they had matter, their history matter, or their legacy matter. And I think Rebirth has done is reinstate much of that. Brought back some relationship, taking away to Ollie and Nina, Clark and Lois, Arthur and Mirror, but so many of these relationships and character dynamics that went away for the last several years were put back with a sense of legacy, with a sense of a shared history. And that's another thing that kind of drifted as the New 52 progressed. The idea of a shared universe became almost an albatross to the books, because everything was kind of doing its own thing, to the degree that you'd have three different Batman books with three different characterizations of Batman. So I like the idea that they have kind of streamlined and brought back some of the things and said, hey, you know, we don't need to necessarily be Marvel. We can do our own thing and tell our own stories and celebrate our history instead of running from it. So that's for me what it's brought back.
You brought up a good point there, because I was really happy that we streamlined both the Batman and the Superman line, because Batman's got two solo titles, Superman has two solo titles, and there are no plans to launch any more solo titles for either of those two characters because they don't need it. But two for each of them is enough. If anybody I would advocate to have another solo title, it might be Wonder Woman, because I feel like she's kind of earned it. Why not give her a secondary solo title, which they're kind of doing that right now with Greg Rucka's Wonder Woman run, because you got the modern day stuff, and then you got a book that's year one. Yeah, I mean, you might as well be having two Wonder Woman books right there. But I mean, still by comparison with Action Comics and Detective, Batman, and Superman all shipping twice a month, it's basically like we got four solo Superman and Batman books. But you know what? Neither here nor there. Jennifer, when you read DC Universe Rebirth, just that one-shot issue, now that you weren't as familiar with the long-standing history of Wally West, of all these other characters that you're seeing in the book, such as like the Blue Beetles, both of them, like Ted Kord and Jaime Reyes, Dr. Fate showing up at one point. What kind of impressions did that leave on you? Like, how did the book work for you as someone who wasn't as familiar with those legacies? What made you want to read more after that?
I think that I was coming from it from a blank slate. I wanted to be introduced. I wanted to have these origins explained to me, and that's across the board what Rebirth has done for me in particular. It's kind of gone through all of their origins and told me where everybody is in them. The Rebirth in particular, that one shot, made me fall in love with Wally. You know, there was a lot of emotional high points for Barry, and it made me love Wally even without knowing anything about Wally. You know, there was so many emotional things with him, and you know, he was at the end, he was ready to let go. He was going to just kind of go and be absorbed by the Speed Force or whatever if Barry wasn't going to respond to him. And, you know, he was ready to let go until Barry said, "I remember you." You know, and I, not knowing anything about Ollie West, it just kind of made me fall in love with him and know more about him, and especially that relationship with Wally and Barry.
I'm so glad you mentioned Wally, because that's another thing I neglected to mention in my bit. Was, to me, if you asked me what characters represent the DC Universe best, I wouldn't say Superman and Batman. I would not say even Green Lantern, as much as I adore it. I would say the two characters in comics that represent the difference between DC and Marvel are Wally West and Dick Grayson, because they are the only two characters. There are other exceptions, but they are the only two prominent characters that we've really been able to see grow from kid sidekicks over the course of their 70-year histories or whatever, to become teens who made mistakes and did stuff, to become their own adult superheroes, to even taking over the mantles of their predecessors. Certainly you've had characters like Bucky Barnes and Marvel, but Bucky jumped from the young sidekick straight to the Winter Soldier. We didn't see the transition. We saw the transition for Wally and Dick Grayson throughout the 80s and 90s to become what they became. And that's why bringing Wally back was so special to me, because that represents what DC is all about, which is you can see growth and you can see characters evolve and become their own people as they get older and turn into heroes that are on par with the people that came before. So I really, really enjoy that they brought Wally back and that they're refocusing on Dick as well.
And even me, somebody who doesn't necessarily know that history, I could tell. It was implied. It was still emotional for me. And I didn't even know anything about it. I could still see in the panels, I could see how Barry reacted to Wally once he remembered. You know, I could see how that was a big deal for him. And then going forward through the rest of Rebirth, how that still plays a part in Barry's life.
And just to remark on that scene, when Barry reaches out and grabs Wally's hand and pulls him back, shouts to Glenn Butler on this one. for like musical soundtracks, like superhero soundtracks popping into my head. It might be an odd one to choose for this, but you know the part of the main title theme for Man of Steel, like when it really like hits hard, when Superman takes first flight, for instance, that is the music that played in my head when Barry reaches out and grabs Wally's wrist and pulls him back out, because I just felt like that music for some reason just like screams DC Comics to me. Like it says this is what can define DC, right? As a soundtrack, it's like this Man of Steel theme from Hans Zimmer. It's just it's bold, it's big, it's beautiful, and that's exactly what Rebirth was. That one shot special was every bit of that. And as somebody who didn't have much emotional connection to Wally West, I found myself like really sucked into it at that point. And I was like, you know what, this is what Wally fans are experiencing, but on a smaller scale. It's like for really long time Wally fans, this is going to be like tenfold what I'm feeling right now. And man, the emotional impact of that one little bit is immeasurable. There are so many fans right now who are just elated that this is happening. But what I want to move to now is the other side of that, because Rebirth as a one-shot is one thing. But Rebirth is an initiative, which is so much bigger than just one comic. It's across the board. Everything is going back to this. It's not going back, but everything is adopting the banner and this idea that Rebirth represents. And after a month, like, all of us have been reading the one book. We read the one shot that came out. Several of the books are already hitting their issue twos and issue threes. We've kept up with it, so each of us are going to talk about what it means to us, which books are really sticking out, which ones have followed that Rebirth initiative best, and looking at where Rebirth is right now, it would be. I would really like to hear, like Greg, I'd really love to hear your thoughts on how like the Rebirth initiative is comparing to like the New 52 launch or the post Infinite Crisis relaunch, the 1 year later, or even the stuff that came after Zero Hour when they did another continuity shift at DC at that point. This is another thing that's kind of like those. Like it's line wide. It's affecting everything. Everybody's continuity has shifted. But this, to me personally, feels different. It feels very different from the New 52. It feels like not that DC necessarily apologizing, but almost legitimizing what they did before and saying this was all part of a grander scale, and a lot of people might have just been too close to the puzzle to be able to see the bigger picture. But now we've taken a moment to back up and show that there is a larger tapestry at work, and there's a much bigger story at play. So, to you, how does this initiative feel by comparison to the last time DC did this, or something similar to this, 5 years ago?
Well, I think, first of all, the main difference between this one and the post-Zero Hour relaunch in the mid-90s would be fewer leather jackets, fewer pouches, fewer mullets, just a general modern look on the clothing, I would say. But in all seriousness,
fewer gold chains as well.
And gold chains. And fewer focuses on misspelled words with X's and Z's.
But everything's extreme.
But, you know, I think that I'm somebody that I liked a lot of the New 50s much. I thought Justice League was good. I thought Green Lantern was great because it was basically the same. Batman, of course, was historically great. Jonah Hex, All-Star Western. Great. There were several great books that was finished, but there were also several bad ones. And I think right now, the biggest difference for me from a macro standpoint now is just a general, more consistent quality. Thus far, I haven't seen all the new relaunches yet. Thus far, the consistent quality is higher across the board right now than it was in the New 52 launch, in my opinion. I think that the the idea of the 52 was to kind of run away from some of the things that DC executives at that time felt that were holding them back. You know, they were trying to, quote, modernize, to do away with the trunks, to do away with the long backstory histories, things like that. This is almost kind of trying to bridge what that initiative was attempting to do in terms of hooking new readers and trying to bridge that and bring it to the previous comic, which was very history, Justice Society, to Green Lantern Corps, to all these concepts that were steeped in mythology and dated back to the 1940s for superheroes, but even further back than that, to the Old West, and even times a lot, go all back to ancient Atlantis, if you follow post-crisis DC continuity. And I think what is similar is that both Rebirth and the New 52 launch and post-Infinite Crisis and post-Zero Hour have a whole bunch of titles out, but some kind of the core titles they're really trying to push to the forefront. And I think you can tell that those titles that they're trying to promote, Green Lanterns was one of them. They're trying to promote Cruise and Simon Baz as being two new characters of the establishment, which I would compare to after Zero Hour with a bunch of characters like Damage, who they were really trying to push, the Ray, where they were really trying to push. Some of these characters were better than others. Starman, of course, came out of this four-hour initiative, which turned out to work really well. Infinite Crisis, it was more of trying to... the one-year later storyline was really trying to streamline the main heroes, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, trying to streamline the Trinity and get them going. There were some other great books, like Booster Gold came out of that too, but this one... They're focusing on the first wave books, I think, most, trying to get them established as a new status quo. But they're really also shining a light on characters that maybe have been overlooked in the past. We've seen the Titans, the renewed interest in the Titans. Everyone, I think, that was familiar with the New 52 would agree that the Teen Titans, the general franchise, really got shredded on the reboot.
Boy, so, is that putting it mildly.
They're kind of bringing back a lot of the classic elements, and I would say that this, so far, this has been the most high quality, consistent wise DC relaunch that I have seen at this point. Post Infinite Crisis was great, but again, my main judgment of that was, you know, there was a great Batman story face to face, there was a great Superman story, there was a great Wonder Woman story out of that, but it didn't have all these ancillary things, like Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, and Nightwing, and Flash, and Justice League, and all these other ancillary things that were also of high quality. So, I think the consistency is the big difference.
Sure. And that's, you know, something that, Jennifer, I know that you can't really speak to, like, how it compares to the New 52 versus all this, but you have been going back and reading some of the older stories lately, because I guess like this got you interested in doing that, like going back and saying, "Oh, well, what came before? Like, what should I be reading now?" Like just this evening, you returned my copy of Green Lantern Rebirth to me, the original Green Lantern Rebirth that came out back in the mid 2000s,
which she helped us review recently on the Longbook Hunters.
Yes, if you guys want to go find that episode, it is also on the PTBN Pop Network, also available at placetobenation.com. Have we plugged it enough yet? I don't know, but I'm going to keep on doing it because you know what, guys? I like it here.
There are more in the pipeline.
This is why Greg needs to be on the show all the time so that I can, you know, not only overwork him, but also get these wonderful in-between like announcements because nobody does it quite like that. I'm not a voice actor, so I can't really pull this stuff off. But, Jenny, what was, like, you've read that version of Rebirth, like the original Green Lantern Rebirth from Geoff Johns. And now you've also been reading Green Lanterns, as Greg alluded to that title a minute ago. I've been following your progress on that and how it's kind of become like one of your favorite books, especially with a character like Jessica Cruz. So how is Green Lanterns stacking up with your experience reading something like Green Lantern Rebirth?
To me, I like seeing the female character. I like the female superhero. She's definitely flawed. She has her issues, like we all do. She has an interesting... She has a humor about her that I enjoy. She still doesn't she, as far as I can tell, hasn't really done a contract yet. She hasn't, she doesn't have that faith in her ability yet. She hasn't really grasped it yet. She's still wrestling with it. I like that. I like her back and forth with Simon. I'm definitely going to ship them for sure.
Yeah, me too.
Greg was doing it before issue one came out.
So angry. He's so... he just wants to just leave this world behind. He wants to go out. He wants to just say, screw you guys, I'm leaving, and just go into space. But he gets pulled back onto Earth. You know, he's... Hal has... made their lantern to where they can't be without each other. I think that's genius. You know, that's Hal just nailed that. He made it to where they can't work without each other. They can't work independently of each other. They have to be a team. And I like that. I really like their dynamic together. I like her relationship with her sister. The sister has been trying to get her out of her apartment for a couple of years. She's, you know, Jessica's had this agoraphobia. I don't know where it stems from. I don't know if they've covered that yet. I've not seen it. You know, Lanterns, where they covered her main issue with going out in public. But that's a huge deal for her. I can see that. I mean, I have that. I am Jessica. In these issues, I am, you know, scared of crowds. I have my little, you know, quirks, you know, but she's still up to the task. She still feels the obligation to fill these duties. She knows she has it within herself, but she hasn't grasped it yet. I'm still waiting for her moment, you know, Andrea Maynard. I'm still waiting for her to take control of that Green Lantern responsibility. And that's, you know, coming from somebody who, you know, I'm a newbie. I'm just going to say, across the board, I'm a newbie, especially for Green Lantern. But I can see her struggle, and I am her in these books. She still has no idea what's going on most of the time, but she's still trying. She's still working it out. I like it.
So I think that's one of the biggest points about Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz, is that they are the type of characters who are those new readers, those people who've never read these books before, totally different demographic than what DC has normally attracted in the past, but it creates the easier entry point. It says, here's you, a character that you can see through the eyes of, you can more like readily relate to, than a character who's been established in this and running for a long time. So it's like you're getting a chance to discover this universe through the eyes of someone who is also discovering this universe.
That's exactly right. That's how I feel. Every time I read her, I'm like, I am you, Jessica. I feel you. I understand you.
Yeah, the fact, just hearing that is awesome, because I've believed for the neighborhood of 10 years now, 12 years now, that Green Lantern in particular is the greatest comic book mythology, because it is so inclusive. It is the most inclusive of all mythologies in comics, in my opinion. And the idea that you can create a character like Jessica Cruz, who deals with anxiety that I can relate to, doesn't like being around people that I can relate to, doesn't do well in crowds that I can relate to, and that you can have someone that's a new reader that can come in and identify with that, and through the eyes of that character, grow into the greater Green Lantern world and understand all the... It's so great to see that. And I think that's one of the cool things about this initiative, is the fact that we're able to have two new Green Lantern characters like that, that are going to introduce people to this world, that's then going to make people want to go back and read Green Lantern Rebirth, the Sinestro Corps War, Blackest Night, the great Green Lantern tales that we are familiar with, Russell. Now we're going to have people that are interested in reading those.
And they're also having their own thing with the Red Dawn. You know, mm-hmm. They're having their own, you know, the seed of fear being sown in the earth, and the rage. You know, the rage, that's what seems to be setting up what they're going to deal with,
mm-hmm.
Going forward. You know, they have that great tree or whatever they
call it now. The rage tree.
You know, so they planted those seeds, and you can see that there's obviously going to be a huge conflict with them. That's something of their own that they can conquer themselves.
All right, and that kind of brings me to another point here. The guy who's responsible for most of us like, sitting around this table right now is Jeff Johns. He is the one that kicked off this whole initiative. Like, Rebirth is really like something that belongs to him. He is the guy that came up with that idea from the outset. Like, go back to 2004 when Green Lantern Rebirth came out. That's his baby. And he gave us what might be the most epic mic drop of all time with DC Universe Rebirth number one. With the big, bold, crazy idea of incorporating Watchmen into this, you know, side of the multiverse, which is something that has never been done. But then Jeff is gone. He's got another responsibility on his plate now. He's working over in the movie and TV side of things. He's not on a monthly book. He hasn't been announced as a creator on any of this. So how do you guys feel like about DC going forward with this gigantic, you know, kind of Herculean task of keeping Rebirth alive, but without Jeff Johns at the helm?
I am maintaining hope to utilize my old buddy Saint Walker. All will be well, and here's why I believe that to be the case. When this whole initiative started, Jeff sat down with each creative team on these books, everyone on these Rebirth books, and they had a whiteboard, and they basically got together and had a conversation about who these characters are, the basics. They use this whiteboard to establish the important factors, what defines these characters. It makes me feel like the teams that they've got in place on these books have a good grasp on who the characters are. Because I think that's one of the things that Jeff wanted to focus on going forward, is character first. Characters are what drive the books, and you have to get people into the heads of these characters. So that's what Jeff has always done so well. And every character that he's written is he makes you understand who they are, what their motivations are, and what makes them different than every other hero in the universe. So, while I'm cautious and, you know, a little bit about whether this whole initiative can be maintained through the hands of other writers and artists, particularly writers, I am very hopeful about what I've seen, and I do believe that Jeff is going to come back at some point. Just anything to put a bow around the Watchmen storyline has been planted, but I'm hopeful about that.
Well, sure, that's his story. Like, I don't really feel like it's a good idea to pass that off to another writer or another creative team and say, hey, this is what Jeff started. We want you to go and write the conclusion of it. Like, no, this is kind of his thing to finish off. He started this. I mean, he's going to have to be there when that last domino falls.
Another thing to keep in mind, DC still has an ace in the hole in the form of the Snyder and Capullo team that will be coming back to do something for DC that we don't know what it is yet.
Also true, and it's not long before that's going to start really becoming a thing, because if you guys are following Greg Capullo and Scott Snyder on Twitter, which I highly recommend you do, they tease all the time that they are talking about their next DC project. They're talking about what they have planned, and these two guys might be the most secretive guys in comics. I mean, they are the Fort Knox of comic book creators of keeping secrets. But I've never seen anybody tease people like these two guys.
And they're not the Fort Minor of Twitter.
No, they're not Fort Minor. That's a good thing.
Very good.
Because it's just 50% teases
and 110% reason to remember the names.
Right. And that'll be our last Linkin Park Fort Minor joke of the day. No, it won't. But that's, you never know what's going to be said on this podcast. You know, it may sound like it's all stoic and everything. We're all super serious about all this content. But you know what? We're going to joke around with you. We're gonna mess around, because, I mean, do the mess around.
Everybody do the mess around. We're going to roll our sleeves up and really get out there and talk to America about comics.
You know, Richard Nixon has been in comics so many times.
Yes.
He's a regular guy. He's in Watchmen.
Went off of his face for some unexplained reason.
That was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was a curious pickup on that one.
going to do?
Still one of the best comic adaptations I've ever watched.
Absolutely.
That ultimate cut is something, man.
Agree.
Now, Jennifer, what is your impression of Geoff Johns thus far? Like, you've read some of his stuff. Maybe not as emotionally invested in his presence as some of us longtime DC stalwarts. But as Rebirth has progressed thus far, as you've gotten into reading certain books, how's it working for you so far as an overall initiative? And moving into our next segment, which books are really working for you? What's your favorite books?
Oh, my favorite books. I'm digging Wonder Woman.
That's a big old thumbs up
over
here.
That sounds kind of, you know, whatever it sounds coming from a chick, but
I'll back you up all day. I love that book.
I like her. I like what they're doing, especially with issue number 2. They're going back, you know, to her origins, kind of. Because I need that. Being me, I need that. You know, I want to know. They've done a whole, with her and Steve, they've done a whole, this is what's going on with him at the time, and this is what's going on with her, and they go the back and forth, you know, with those two until they meet. I like that. I need that.
They had interesting parallel stories in that second issue. It was like, man, these two are living very similar lives, and when it all came together in that that big moment at the end, I was like, now this is really going to get going, isn't it? Like, that was a really good, quick setup that took place over the course of what felt like a few years in both of their lives to kind of give us an idea of how they became who they are. And then here are these two people put together by random chance. Or is it? Or is it?
Or is it? That's the... Aha! Aha! That's the question.
I like Diana's, she's there, but she doesn't look at the stars the way the other girls look at the stars. She looks to the horizon. You know, she wants to see what else is going on in her world. She doesn't necessarily, she's not so tied to what the gods want. You know, she wants to experience things for herself. And I think that when she meets Steve, that is her catalyst. You know, I don't know what they're going to do going forward, but it seems to me that that's her catalyst for, let me see what else is out there. You know, I can see her, you know, being intrigued with him and the world that he comes from.
Exactly. And like, Wonder Woman is a big standout for me too. Like the writing, the art. I mean, having Greg Rucka back on the book, he is one of the all-time greats in Wonder Woman writing. He had a run on her book years ago that has actually just now been recollected by DC. A new trade of that has just come out. I highly recommend.
Worth reading.
Very much so. It's one of the best runs of Wonder Woman. I highly recommend if you find Wonder Woman by Greg Rucka, Volume 1, in a local comic shop or on Amazon, wherever it is you shop for comics, get that book. It is a true classic.
He had a great run on Wonder Woman. He had a pretty good walk on Wonder Woman as well.
Yes. Like, he learned to walk again.
He did. And he did. And then he learned to fly.
Yes, he did. It seemed to be a running theme in Foo Fighters music.
They learned it. They're kind of going backwards, though. Like, they learned to fly before they learned to walk again.
Sometimes you got to fly before you walk. That's how that saying goes, right?
I think that's right. That's how it goes in the Hawk People world in Thanagar.
I think we just figured out that Dave Grohl is Thanagarian.
Good lord. We just solved a mystery, folks. The mystery of Dave Grohl's origins. He comes from the Thanagar. With Adam Strange, who would be, I don't even know. The Foo Fighters are only rivalries, I guess. But
they're unrivaled. They're unparalleled right now.
Very good, Mr. Lyle.
That just means that the war is over. Sorry, Adam Strange, you lost. Dave Grohl has declared victory.
Suck it, Ranagar.
it's just Ran.
But yeah,
Planet Ran, you suck.
Yeah, totally agree with Wonder Woman. It's been outstanding thus far. Greg Rucka writing again, wonderful. Liam Sharp, a revelation of art.
Good God, has he.
Outstanding art. I loved the last page of Wonder Woman, not Wonder Woman, but issue number 1, where the cheetah tackles her.
Good God, what a panel.
Page. I love the way that the cheetah has been
Exactly. Like, what a splash page that was. It was like, this is the most amazing page that I think Liam Sharp has ever drawn. And I mean, he had some killer art going into that issue. But the last pages of Wonder Woman Rebirth number one were outstanding. But then you get to that last page of Wonder Woman number one, and you see the new design of Cheetah, and she's like face to face with Diana. I mean, just the level of detail in that, it's like, good God, how could this guy work this fast, like do this much stuff, and it looked that good?
It proves you don't have to be awkward to have a good splash page.
Take a shot now, Anna.
That is the rule. And you can blame Todd Weber. In fact, we'll give you his contact information after this so that you can thoroughly bitch him out for this horrible atrocity that has befallen. Speaking of Aquaman, Greg, how'd that book going?
Oh my gosh, Aquaman. Let me talk to you about Aquaman. Can I talk to you about Aquaman for a moment?
Preach the words.
Aquaman. Aquaman has been the man in the New 52. Aquaman has risen from the depths of the seas, and he's provided a new center point character for everyone that's listening to this right now. I'm going to leave this other movie. Just talking seriously. Aquaman, character of Arthur Curry, has been one of the revelations of the Rebirth Initiative. And I say that because I had stopped reading Aquaman, or Aquaman, as some may say, around the time of when right before Jeff Johns left the book, actually, because I was running really low on funds, long story. Anyway, Dan Abnett has really come on and streamlined that entire series. He's gotten it back to what it was with Johns, which is taking all of the jokes, all of the ancillary ideas about Aquaman, embracing them, moving them to the side, and showing you what makes him a heroic character. And in the process, just as important, Russell, Mera.
Yes.
Who has been the co-lead of the book, essentially. She's such an amazing character, and it's wonderful to see her getting a push again from DC Comics. The art, Brad Walker, amazing. The colors throughout the book have been fantastic.
Yeah, the colorists on these books, I feel bad because I don't know all of their names off the top of my head, but there's a lot that needs to be said for the guys who are coloring these books, because they are the ones that are adding like some real depth to this art. And as much as we can talk about Brad Walker, I got to give Scott Eaton a lot of credit for issue two of Aquaman. I thought that was absolutely amazing, like, how well he did. Didn't know how that was going to work out. I mean, I've liked Scott Eaton's stuff in the past, but I didn't know how he was going to really match up with, you know, the tremendous talent that is Brad Walker.
And also, Aquaman, I think, I don't know how to draw. That's the first thing. But
same here.
I imagine that Aquaman would be one of the harder books to draw in the DC Pantheon, because you're dealing with an underwater character. There's a lot of dynamics there with regards to how you draw people breathing, how you draw people fighting. It's just a different dynamic. So I've always imagined Aquaman would be difficult for some people to draw. These guys are killing it every single issue.
Yes, and there was a moment in issue two, actually, that caused a little controversy in some of the comics groups that I frequent. Some were not happy with the way that Aquaman defeats Black Manta in issue two. Basically, you know, talks him down. But he talks him off the ledge to say, you know, in a way that, kill me what you have left. Like, your whole life is built around vengeance. Like, vengeance has consumed you. It kind of reminded me of the scene in Civil War, actually, when Black Panther was taking down Zemo.
He was very similar to that.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, vengeance has consumed you, and it's all you are now. It's all you have left. So once you've gotten it, what's left for your life? And we saw what was going to happen with Zemo. He was going to kill himself. He was like, that's it. Like, my life has no purpose anymore. I've gotten this. And I think Aquaman reveals to Black Manta in that scene that Manta doesn't actually want to die. But it wasn't a suicide mission for Black Manta. It was, I'm going to kill Arthur Curry, and then I'm going to go on with my life. The only problem is I haven't really thought about what that means. And Arthur brought that up. He was like,
where do you go from here?
Arthur's like, I've moved on from
the bad thing I did of killing your father. I have this mission to reintegrate Atlantis to the larger world. But what do you have beyond me? And I never, I never considered that could be a great way for Aquaman to take somebody down. He points out Black Manta has no reason to exist beyond Arthur, but I think that the ending of Aquaman 2 teases that he's about to find that Black Manta is going to have that next that next reason to continue on beyond Arthur's curse.
Well, it seems to suggest that Aquaman, or that Black Manta, has found out a reason for he to change who he used to be.
And the reason is you.
And that's what it seems to suggest.
I feel so special.
I understood the complaints, you know, but to me, it was like, it represented a maturation of the Aquaman character.
He can't help himself at this point. And it's just natural.
It brought him to a point where a young, furry, killed black man.
Oh, absolutely. Like, if
stabbed him right in the heart with a trident, killed him. Mr. Tarkanian.
He even says that, I think, in the dialogue. That he says if he was still the Arthur Curry from back then, that Manta would have already been dead.
In many ways, it represents a mature superhero. Because this is as much as we can get into that another time, because we both disagree with this complaint. But a complaint that people have of Man of Steel is he was willing to. He thought that that was the only out was to kill Zod. Well, in this case, Manta is telling Aquaman, if you don't kill me, I'm going to keep coming after you. And your wife, and kids. I'm always coming after you. He'll be ready. And Aquaman says, I'm at a point now in life where I don't have to. I'm gonna make sure, I'm gonna prove what the hero I am, because I'm gonna talk you down from the edge. And he does. And makes Manta realize that, you know, it's like that great episode of Batman in the series, the man who's the Batman. And then Joker realizes with Batman dead, is there?
Yeah.
I mean, there
goes
all my
life.
You know?
And he quits. Like, Joker kind of like takes a back seat and doesn't know what to do with himself.
Yeah. So it's similar with Black Manta. So I really love the show. I love the whole series to this point. It has been great. I love Arthur is trying to, the struggle trying to bridge humans and the Atlanteans. The humans who fear the Atlanteans who distrust the humans. Both for good reasons. And he's trying to bridge the gap between them, and stuff just keeps getting in his way, but he's not giving up.
And that's a testament to the writing of Dan Abnett, too, because the guy just knows how to craft this kind of story and tell it so incredibly well. Greg, aside from Aquaman, what book or books are really hitting for you right now? Like, what has... what has worked in Rebirth? Like, what is the, like, if you could pick one or two books that really hit, who got it right in Rebirth, and what is it about that's making them right?
You can't see it right now, dear listeners, but I'm making a symbol with my fingers right now. Jennifer is holding her head nervous. Undoubtedly because she agrees 1,000%. The standout French. There's, all of them have been good, to be quite honest. There has been a bad book with a punch, based on possible Central Justice League. But all of these franchises have been great. The two Superman books right now, Action Comics and Superman, are outstanding. They're killing. They're everything that I want to see in a Superman book that I've been waiting years to see. In fact, it's been at least 10 years, I think, since both Superman films, Superman and Action, both firing on all cylinders. And now you've got Action Comics that is a pure action that is awesome. Dan Jurgens and Patrick Zurcher killing it.
And let's give shouts to Tyler Kirkham for that most recent issue.
Absolutely. You've got Superman by the unparalleled Peter J. Patrick Hansen about Superman. It's a much slower book. It's a book about Superman and his family. And It's about emotion. It's about the family dynamic, father-son, mother-son, husband-wife dynamics. And it's been incredible. I just finished reading issue number 2, as you know, Russell.
Yeah,
and
I was there for it.
Superman, and it just blew me away. Just so emotional. So many beats that just screamed out, this is Superman. This is when he turns after John makes a mistake. Russell just learns his powers. He messes up and hits his dad with his heat vision. And instead of the look of anger or glowing red eyes and so much as Superman books, he turns to him and he just smiles and he says, I can take it, no problem. And it was just such a Superman moment. And so it's a book that's taking me back to my childhood. So is Action.
Yes.
Seeing a fight between Doomsday and Superman that is reminiscent. The first one they had is probably the best Superman Doomsday fight since the first one back in the day. So I'm a big fan of what's going on in the two Superman books. And that's not to take anything away from, hopefully, Jenny will talk about Batman a little bit.
Oh,
but
sure.
That's not to take away from any of these other great books because they're all doing great work right now. But that those two really stand out so far.
Yes, they do. I would love to echo and I'm going to echo every sentiment you have about the Superman line. That is absolutely where I am with Rebirth right now. Like, I went into it fresh, like just picking up all the books to sample every one of them and say, all right, who's going to jump out at me? Which of these books is going to be exactly what I want? And here we are, like a month and a half in, it's Action Comics and it's Superman. Those two books have hit every single beat that I have wanted them to. They are written and drawn beautifully. My God, the art on both of these books is just phenomenal.
I was remarking to Nick the other day during one of our daily lunch phone conversations, as sad as that is, that I was blown away by Patrick Zercher's ability to draw Superman. He did good with Green Arrow, but he's natural.
I think this is his book. Like, Patrick Zercher's been in the business for a long time. He's done a lot of work, but he's never been this good. He's never just stood out as like the guy at DC. Like, I've placed J.C. Fabok, Ivan Reis, Jim Lee. These are the guys that I always hold up as saying, if you want a clear example of what the DC, quote, air quotes, house style is, it's those three guys. And after reading Action Comics, I'm going to put Patrick Zercher in that lineup because, I mean, yeah, he's been in the business probably as long as Jim Lee has. He's been doing this years and years, worked at Marvel and DC, had some pretty great runs. But this is it. This is his moment. This is his shining, crowning achievement. Nobody has ever drawn Superman quite like this. And so cleanly, so beautiful action. Like, he's not quite like photorealistic like Alex Ross. I mean, but he's just shy of it.
What's amazing is not to draw, because a lot of people have drawn Superman well, but the great Superman artists draw Superman in a unique way. Jim Lee's Superman does not look like Kurt Swan's Superman. Does not look like John Byrne's Superman. Does not look like Patrick Zercher's Superman. That's a big compliment. To put anyone in the same breath with Jim Lee with me is saying a lot, because as you know, if I'm ranking the Lees all time, I go Bruce and then Jim very close behind him. So, you know.
Sorry, Jed, you're not on the list. You spelled your name with an I.
That's right. He's behind. And then Ang Lee is well down the list. So, you know, Stan is behind.
Stan Lee's up there.
You know. But yeah, so I'm a big fan of Patrick Zercher, and while I mentioned his work on Green Arrow a minute ago, I want to take a minute just in case. So make sure we don't forget, I have to give some love to Green Arrow and the work that Ben Percy and Otto Schmidt are doing on, it's an unusual name in this day and age. But anyway, Otto Schmidt and Ben Percy are doing wonderful work on Green Arrow. And they have brought the fun and the sense of adventure back to the Green Arrow book, and I'm really excited about where it's going. It's been so great. Amico Queen continues to be one of the best characters in comics. New characters Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino invented her in their epic run that you can now get in a deluxe hardcover edition that Nicholas has recently purchased.
Worth every penny.
And no, their Green Arrow is killing it right now. So I just want that out there. I'll let.
Well, sure. Like Green Arrow was also one of my top books. It's one of those that I honestly didn't have a lot of hope for going in to this first round of Rebirth titles, because I had read Ben Percy's Green Arrow before that, and I was unimpressed. Like, it did nothing for me. It was utterly forgettable. It started off okay, and, you know, speaking of Patrick Zercher, he was the artist on the book at the beginning of Ben Percy's run, but it wasn't working. Something just was missing from this. It didn't feel like it had the heart of Green Arrow. So when Green Arrow Rebirth starts and Ben Percy is still the writer, I was like, okay, I'll try it. But I almost skipped the book. Like, I was at the comic shop the day it came out, saw it on the shelf, saw the, you know, the artwork from Otto Schmidt. I really liked that. And I said, okay, I'll try this. I'll pick it up and see where we are. But if this is more of the same, if this is more of, you know, the typical Ben Percy Green Arrow that I've gotten up to this point, this is going to be the first Rebirth book that I don't bother with. Boy, am I glad I picked up that Rebirth issue. It blew my mind. It was classic Green Arrow. I put it down and I was like, wow. It's like Danny O'Neill and Mike Carell got together and hatched Ben Percy. His ideas are like the best parts of both of those guys' runs. Those two guys are vastly different from one another. If you've ever read Green Arrow, they take on very different aspects of that character. And even though both of them have a heavy influence on the TV show Arrow, they come from different schools of thought on Green Arrow. And somehow Ben Percy has married these two schools together and created this new Green Arrow run that's much like what I've always read Green Arrow as. This is the first time in a long time that I've read a Green Arrow story, and the voice I heard in my head was the guy from Justice League Unlimited, and it fit perfectly. And the dynamic that he has with Dinah Lance just be perfect. Like the Black Canary relationship is back. It feels natural. It feels like
it never left.
Yeah, it feels like everything that was missing from Green Arrow is right back in the book again. And Otto Schmidt, mentioned a little bit of him, but I want to sing that dude's praises as a guy that I would put on the same level as Sean Murphy, one of my absolute favorite artists. And I look at Otto Schmidt's work like different, but you've got a lot of that same flow and ability, and his layouts don't get enough credit, but they are very creative.
Agreed. And you know, while we're talking about Green Arrow, I'm interested in your take, Jennifer, because one of the things that I suspect is interesting for people that are reading Green Arrow now, because a lot of people are probably came into the character through the TV show. And as many know from listening to us over the years, one of the few things that I did not like about Arrow early on, I love Arrow, but I always thought that it was unfortunate that the Oliver Queen and the Dinah Lance on the show did not have any chemistry. Did you find it interesting then to see in the comic book, Jennifer, the fact that these two characters really do belong together in the comics? And how does that relate to how it was on the show, where it never really meshed?
I did come to love Green Arrow through Arrow. You know, I just totally fell in love with him through the TV show. And then with Rebirth, like I said, I didn't know any of their history. I read the first Rebirth issue, and then my friend Russell picked up the number one issue, which I have not read, and then I've had number two issue that I have not read. So from the first original one-shot issue of Rebirth, it was interesting. You know, you could tell they had this familiarity with each other. You know, this connection that was undeniable with those two characters, but this did not translate TV at all. You know, I hated on Laurel for a while. I mean, she got better towards you know,
I would
the
agree.
End of her little spot there, but you know, I'm taking it as two different things. It's two different things in my head. You know, there's Arrow. Hashtag Felicity. I don't care. I don't Whoop. Care. I don't care. I love them. I love them. And
me too.
I think that the next season will put them right the way they should be. I think Felicity will be written the way that she should be written, hopefully.
Yes, not the off-character writing of the past season.
Exactly.
And we'll get to more of that after the break, because we're going to get heavy into the influence of DC Rebirth on TV and movies. But I take it that Green Arrow Rebirth made an impression on you.
It did. I'm more open to that idea of, you know, them together. I mean, I'm able to separate it.
Sure.
You know, I'm not taking any prejudice from the TV show. I'm not taking it as a clean slate. Like, I'm just trying to get it as
a so that line that he says to Dinah. Now you haven't read it yet.
No, I haven't read one.
Okay, so when you read issue one, there's a line in there that is a classic Green Arrow line. Greg, you know which one I'm talking about.
I can't wait.
It's something that Green Arrow has long called Black Canary. His nickname for her. Says it to this version of Dinah for the very first time in issue one. And it is just this really emotional, like... It was one of those moments where all of us Green Arrow nerds were like, said it in my heart, yes.
Y'all were a bunch of salties, so I know how y'all...
We're a couple...
Oh, yes.
We are totally a couple of girls when it comes
Let's get into the Marshes here at Nerddom, because when he said that line to her, his nickname for her, it reminded me of all the classic soap opera super couples that I used to watch when I was a kid with my mother. So
I'm trying my best, folks, to not
don't
let
do
this,
it.
Not let this become a Melrose Place podcast.
Tim, where are you? I need you.
Tim, if you jump in on this podcast right now, I will never, ever let you talk about Cyclops on my show again.
That is an amazing idea. At some point in the future, we should have run-ins on our podcast.
If there needs to be a surprise run-in, like somebody just randomly call in and make that happen.
Gerard Depardieu.
Hey, if Gerard Depardieu wants to jump in on the podcast, I'll let him rant in French for a few minutes before I cut him off. Why not? I don't know what he's saying. It could be anything right now. But with that, I want to move into the last subject before we go to break. We've talked about the books that we each love. Well, Jenny, you didn't get to riff on the book that I think is the big standout of Rebirth. Like, who really got it right? Like, who hit the ground running and is the best book? Book line or just book in general? Who nailed it?
Well, I said before, I love me some Batman, and I have loved this Batman. One of the scenes where Bruce is doing exercises off the top of his helipad at the top of the tower and just like casually working out while Lucius just talks to him about business stuff. You know, he's just, you know, with his little biker shorts on and, you know, doing his little exercises. Just like, this is any other day. I'm just doing this.
I think we all know where this is going, don't we, folks?
Are you filling yourself up, Mr. Wayne?
Right. Then, Alfred.
Mr. Fox.
Alfred is the best. His dry wit, his little condescending little digs in there, it just works so well against Bruce.
Waiting for your stability, Master Bruce.
Just delights me. And even Commissioner Gordon does the same sort of thing. He's just over there filing his fingernails, you know, stuff's happening, Gotham Girl. He's just like, whatevs, this is happening, get used to it. I love it. I can't help it.
Now, have you been reading Detective Comics?
No.
Oh, God. Like, I love Batman. Like, I'm really enjoying what Tom King and David Finch, Mikhail Janin, the Rebirth issue was by Janin. It was fantastic. I love that. But Detective Comics right now is the Bat book for me because that is the Bat family. Like, Batwoman out front, Tim Drake in a costume that finally doesn't completely suck. Stephanie Brown is back as Spoiler, and it works. You know, seeing that team dynamic. But what really stood out to me, and I think this is something that Nick has mentioned on our travel with Fanboys, that the Clayface stuff is just awesome. They really took an almost Batman the Animated Series version of Clayface and showed that he's really a tragic figure who, if given the opportunity, would want to do good if you would just not treat him like a villain. And Bruce takes that stance. He's like, I'm going to try this. I'm going to give you an opportunity to be something more than what you have been. So come on with me. Like, come and join this group and go through boot camp with Batwoman training you guys. And I got to say, the Eddie Barrows art is the best that that guy has been ever. I loved his run on Nightwing back when the New 52 started, but I always found his figures to be just a little bit stiff, like not overly so, but it seemed like he did get a lot of big motion there.
I agree.
And he has totally changed. He's still got that same clean, like, house DC style. But he's got motion in there. That opening first issue of Detective Comics, when they return to the original numbering, Batman standing in the church with his cape like down flowing. It's like very silhouette, and there's like snow coming in around him. I thought that was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
What I'm hearing is you offering to lend me all of these comics.
Phil, if he happens to listen to this later, needs to be ordering Jenny some copies of Detective Comics 934 and up.
Like, please put that on my pull list.
Yes.
And the Lamborghini Densha.
Much more shut up. Now, but that brings us to the last thing that we're going to talk about before we take a much needed break. What is it working in? Book that isn't really hitting for you, the book that you tried it and you thought, you know, maybe it's not bad, maybe it's not a bad book, maybe it's just a book that seems to be like not up to the quality of some of the other stuff. Maybe you had expectations that aren't being met, and what could turn it around? I know which book it is for me. I mean, it's right on the tip of my tongue.
I did too.
Although I will say that it's made some steps recently to address some of the things I've said. But I'm going to start where we ended on this last one. Jenny, what book is the one that you picked up and said, huh, this didn't really grab me?
Well, I'm going to say the same thing that you guys are going to say, which is The Flash. And then it hurts my heart because it's not really the story for me. It's the art. It's just, I don't know from nothing. I'm just saying that it doesn't look as great as I want it to look. It doesn't do it for me with the way that it's drawn. I do like the latest one, the latest issue, number two. It picked it back up for me, story-wise.
It did.
You know, I was like, yeah, that's what I want.
It got going in the second half. It really took off.
I'm interested in that. Of course, I don't know what they're going to do with it, but I will say that it hurts my heart a lot because Flashpoint is my jam, and that's where my love of the Flash comes from, is that whole thing. And then I don't want to say that it's not bad. Of course it's not bad. It's just not as good as others.
Yeah, it's probably hard to convince Andy Kubert to come back and throw Flash.
That would be great if they could, though.
God, it would.
That guy's awesome on art. I've been a little. I don't mean to come off harsh on the Flash. It's good. Objectively, it's a good book. Mm-hmm. It's just not outstanding.
Yeah.
Some of these other ones are.
It's missing something. There's something about it that's not doing it.
What is the book that I'm... Oh, go ahead.
So to me, the missing element kind of feels like the very thing that they addressed in Rebirth, in the DC Universe Rebirth one-shot, the heart of it, the love of it. Because there seems to be a little bit of that missing. Because, you know, when you watch an episode of The Flash on TV, that just oozes out of every pore of that show. And it's not doing it out of the comic right now. And that's really sad to say, because it seems like Flash would be the book where
exactly
that should be happening, because it's the central focal point of where everything changes.
Yep.
Now, I will give them credit in issue two. They started to bring some of that out and tying a lot of the emotional ties back to Wally, even though Wally's not in the book. Not the original Wally. But I will say that I love what Josh Williams is doing with the younger Wally. Those parts of the book are my favorite parts of the book. Whenever he comes in, I'm like, man, I want to read more of this kid because he's being written and even drawn really well. Like, that's where the art like, takes off and starts to shine. It's just a more intriguing story, but the stuff that's going on with Barry takes too long to get going.
And
the stuff, like, it feels like Joshua Williams really wants to write that younger Wally West.
Yeah.
He gets there and he's like, fire on all cylinders. Everything is just working. It's all pop. No stop. And man, I can't pronounce the artist's name, and I'm not going to butcher it here. But I will say that there are times in his layouts very good. And the flashes in motion, like when he's drawing the action scene, it's like, man, this looks great. And I'm loving this. But then you get to the quiet moments, and the faces just look
the faces. That's what does it for me. I'm glad I'm not the only
one. No, because I'm like, weird.
This looks weird.
The artist, I'll call him John Doe. His art is I agree. It's not right. Well, I'll say this. I'm hopeful that they will bring the Barry and Iris romance back because one of the hallmarks of great Flash runs, romance has always been a part of the Flash. Even in the 60s and 70s with Barry and Iris, of course, you haven't read these yet, but Wally and Linda was like the DC relationship other than Lois and Clark in the 90s. And then Barry and Iris again later on. So I think that as they bring that back, it'll help. And but the book for me that I was going to point out is Justice League. Justice League Rebirth was the worst issue of the Rebirth Initiative, in my opinion. Not horrible, but Brian Hitch is better than that. His art is better than that.
His writing's better than that.
I thought the dialogue was bad in it. The art was not up to his usual standards. He's usually much more detailed, much sharper. Yeah, it was clearly a bit of a rush job. And
it felt like one.
Yeah, so that was a huge disappointment for me, and I'm hoping it'll be better.
And in fairness, like an interview he did with DC All Access not too long ago, he avoided saying the words exactly because of being his PR show for them. But he was alluding to the idea that this was a rush job for him, at least on the art, because it was like, okay, he wrote the story and had kind of scripted it out, but having trouble locking down an artist to do the book because Tony Daniel, who's the regular artist of Justice League, was already working on issue one and was moving their story forward. But these Rebirth one-shots are just that. They're supposed to be entry points, not necessarily tying into the main story. So that they could find somebody to draw the book, they were like, well, we solicit JLA stuff that you're working on for a later time. So that you can concentrate on getting this issue done because we got to get Rebirth going like right now. And you know, to whatever effect, you know, whatever the result was, I can say that if it was indeed a rush job, if this was rushing out and this is as bad as it gets, it was still not that bad. Some people I saw, we've encountered some folks in our illustrious, wonderful, prestigious Facebook group. Like, you can find the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook group, and you can join the discussion there where we talked about this book. And I still made the case that this book was not as bad as some of our commenters said it was. And that, though I do concede the point, it was mediocre. It was not up to Hitch's standards on any level. The art was not, the dialogue was not, this is not the Brian Hitch that I know. But I do think that issue one, when Tony Daniel is drawing it, if that preview that we saw was any indication, is going to be one of the most badass books on the shelf. Because, I mean, does it get more badass than Wonder Woman riding a freaking lightning bolt into the middle of a war zone?
Hell no.
And then taking out an entire Russian invading military, all while, like, dropping this very eloquent speech of, I gave you an opportunity to talk about this. I've tried over and over again to get you to see reason, and you have brought this on yourself because you wouldn't listen and because you decided to become an aggressor.
Duh.
I was like, that's it. That's it.
That sounds like me talking to my 7-year-old.
See?
Poor Ethan.
God, I hope you haven't brought the thunder down on Ethan.
But I can.
Oh, that poor child.
Yeah.
Ethan, shouts to you, buddy. We feel for you, bro.
I will say this. I will say this. This is, I'm giving Justice League one more issue for me to hitch my wagon to it, if you will. And if not, I'll have to jettison it in favor of all these other books because, you know, eventually, even, I know it's hard to believe, but even I, Greg Phillips, have a limit to how much money I have. I know. With one as successful, talented, and handsome as I,
but
how could I ever run out of money?
But you make money now.
That's true. I make money. However, I also spend more money, so...
That happens.
Gasoline, apparently, is a thing that you have to...
Wise philosopher once said...
Drive.
Oh, money, more problems.
You know what? Biggie got it right all those years ago.
Yeah, he did. We can't say anything negative about the philosophy that is Mr. Biggie Smalls.
It's like I recently said on Facebook. I live by a simple philosophy. You think your ish don't stink, but you are Mrs. P.U. So...
Lean a little bit closer and see that the roses really smell like... That's a little stank on you.
That's right.
That's not from that album.
I was dropping a little Kanye on you, actually.
Oh yeah, you were dropping Kanye, but I wanted to go to a good rapper. I'm totally kidding, Kanye. I know that you're probably self-absorbed enough to actually listen to this because you are one of those guys who totally Twitter searches your own name. And what you're going to find is a guy who is thinking that your most recent work is utter shit, but that I think that your albums from The College Dropout all the way up where would you say, Greg?
Beautiful, Dark, Twisted Fantasy.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. All of those. That's good stuff. What happened to you, Kanye? And I know it wasn't a Kardashian because you started going crazy long before she got there. So
that's the whitest shit I ever heard.
My Beautiful, Dark, Twisted Fantasy, one of my favorite Kanye pieces. Also, I like Stankonia, Speaker Box, and The Love Below by Outkast.
Because Atlanta rappers represent. Them.
Represent. That's what I say as well.
And we are so white. I'm actually not as close. Although I do want to say that I tried out something very different, a book that I intend to skip altogether. And that was Superman. I hate myself for not knowing the artist's name on the book. Although the art had its moments of like being, you know, fairly impressive, there were also moments where it just kind of felt kind of bland. It just didn't really like pop for me. It's like the guy kind of has a little bit of a Howard Porter thing going on, but he's not quite there yet. Maybe he's an up-and-comer, or maybe I'm just hit me up on Twitter if I'm wrong there. You can find me at @Russell_Sellers, and you can lambast me for not knowing the proper artist name. But in any case,
also call me really white.
I am really white. I'm lit. I'm really white.
Or as our good friend Vern Lundquist would say, white.
White.
So
I am not quite the end. I am
white. That's right.
And I can't really apologize for that. I was like, no, I'm not going there. I was going to say, I'm going to make another horrible music reference just to show you.
Let's keep bringing it. Let's turn it into the
This is going off the rails, folks. You thought the Aquaman podcast was something. Holy shit. Where are we? Anyway, I'm not as close to dropping Justice League as Greg is, but like I said, I tried out New Superman because the preview pages came out, and while the first one is kind of okay, it made
Kenan Kong.
That's his name.
I'm going to say Kenan. I don't know if that's how
I'm
pronounced.
Going to assume that's probably correct. And again, you can
Kenan and Kel.
Again, find me on Twitter and blast me for getting it wrong. I'll gladly take correction. But the kid, like Greg, actually pointed this out to me in reading the second preview that had more of an action-oriented style. That he felt like the Superboy from the '90s. He seems a lot like Kal-El. The original Kal-El from before the New 52, like the one that we all know and remember.
The
really good one. And he's got those qualities. He's written that way. The dialogue is actually pretty good, so I was enjoying all of that. But overall, that issue just didn't grab me. It didn't hold on to me the way that I was expecting it to. There were scenes that did. There's a scene with Keaton's father when he's trying to tell the dad, like, look, I did this really incredible thing that, you know, nobody would ever have expected me to do. Like, I, you know, just before this event happens, I was being a complete dick and, like, just being a total shit. And then I get captured on video saving this kid's life, And everybody's calling me a hero now. This is like a big shiny moment. I would like you to be proud of me. And his dad just kind of completely blows him off. Like, you know, what he did doesn't matter because his dad's a conspiracy theory nut and is like totally off the rails. He thinks that his son is like just wasting his life. It's a classic trope.
His dad is Hugo Root type person.
Totally. Like, he's
Sheriff Hugo Root, that is.
Like, he is exactly what you would expect. You know, he's a classic trope. And that's another thing about the book is that it really is full of the classic comic book tropes. Like, if you've experienced this before, this feels very familiar. It feels like old hat just with a new coat of paint, new characters. It has potential. I will say that it does have a lot of potential to be something really interesting later, but right now it just isn't quite there. And with all the other books that I'm buying, I can't justify putting it on my pull list. But I do think that it's worth a try, especially if you're an old school Superboy fan, or if you're looking for a Superman-like character who is totally not Clark Kent, but has all of his powers. And is likely being controlled by a government organization out of China. Because the whole book takes place there. I mean, he's a Chinese character. And he's written by a prolific Chinese writer, Chinese-American writer named Gene Yang, who is a major award-winning author. So this is a book that people should look into because I think it's going to hit for some people. And, you know, I would hate for a new character to just be like completely dismissed because he's not a classic character. But I will say, for my money, for my pull list, it's a trade weight. It's one that I will pick up the collection. I will try that out once the whole story arc is complete, but I am not going to make room for it in my pull list. And I know neither of you guys have read that book yet, but I would encourage you, give it a shot, see if it works for you.
I'll read your trade when you get
it. Okay, that's fine. I'm buying it digitally, so you may be out on that one. That's right, I do digital comics too. Ready? It's time for us to take a break, and we will come back and talk about another side of this whole thing, which is what effect, if any, do we think that the Rebirth Initiative is going to have on the movies and TV shows and, you know, the crossover of Geoff Johns into that is going to play a huge factor, at least I think so. We'll see what my guests think about it later. You know, there may be there might be some surprises in that second half.
We'll stay on the scene like a sex machine.
And we will be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's blog, A Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Back to the second half of this new episode all about DC Rebirth. I'm going to call this the Afterbirth special because that's totally a thing and it's not gross. Greg, don't look at me like that. You know I've been waiting to make that joke all day.
The Afterbirth was sautéed mushrooms.
It vaguely resembles that, so we'll run with that. What little bit of that I unfortunately had to witness in biology courses, because I guess it's fortunate enough that I've not witnessed that in person. Anyway, I'm getting off topic here. We are back with my wonderful guests, Jennifer Smith and Greg Phillips, to talk more about the DC Rebirth Effect. Now, for the break, of course, we talk all about our favorite books and the parts of DC Rebirth that are really working, that maybe aren't working out quite as well as others. And unfortunately, we had to change locations for the second half. But, stores can't stay open forever. And these folks, they got jobs, they got lives, they got to go home. They got to sleep. I understand that. And unfortunately, Philip was not able to join us on the podcast this time, but was able to talk to him briefly before we left to get some idea about how Rebirth is working out for him at a retailer level. And he was telling me, Greg, Jennifer, this is a pretty big deal. He went from having like 7 Superman subscribers before Rebirth hit to now having well over 30. And, I mean, that's a testament to the Rebirth Effect. If you're pulling in that kind of number, off of like that that much of a shift, like, or the, just this little bit of a shift, it says that they're on the right track. It also says that their Batman numbers, which were already big, just exploded. Like they went even bigger. Pretty much DC across the board has doubled, close to tripled in subscriber numbers for Fanatics and Dothan. I think that's going to be kind of indicative of the story of a lot of comic shops, I think. I know it's kind of that way at my shop in Montgomery at Capital City Comics. They've had a similar story. But that part aside, talking about the retailer point of view from sort of outsider perspective. I do work with some retailers in my off hours. We're going to get to the next part, like we promised before the break, the DC movies and TV shows. The rebirth effect, as I'm going to henceforth call it. I totally didn't coin it, but I'll take money for it if somebody wants to pay me. So, we've seen what rebirth has done with comics. What might it do, or what should it do, with television and film? Now let's start with the most like obvious ones, the ones that we could potentially see first. That would be the TV side, because new seasons of Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl, and Gotham will all be starting up this fall. And those will be coming to us like well before any of the new DC movies, the ones that would have been filmed after Rebirth happened. We're all big fans of those shows.
Definitely.
Those are big ones for us. Gotham to a lesser extent for me and Greg. But that's... Everybody knows that. Like if you listen to us for any period of time, you know our feelings on that show. We don't have to rehash that. I heard a guy...
We feel about Gotham the way that Scott Steiner feels about overweight Samoans. So
that's all you need.
You wrestling fans out there will understand this reference.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's all that you really need to know about our feelings on that show. But what effect, if any, do we think that Rebirth might have on shows like Arrow, Flash? Should it? Because as we know, Jeff Johns has taken on a more active role in the film side for DC. He's moved over to be the co-head of DC Films, which is a kind of a new thing for him. And I mean, whenever he started his career, he was a film guy. He worked with Richard Donner for years before he wound up working in comics. So now he's kind of going back to his roots a little bit, getting involved with the comics, or getting involved with the film side of things. He's already been an executive producer and show developer for Flash, as well as Legends of Tomorrow. He definitely works closely with the folks that are running Arrow. So, Greg, let's start with you. Do you think that Rebirth is going to have any kind of noticeable effect on any of these shows? And should it? Like, do you think that there's room for it to have that kind of effect?
To be honest, I don't think it'll have any effect on the TV side. I think that the DC TV side of things is clicking pretty well on all cylinders. Clearly, there are some changes that could be made to some of the shows. I mean, I think Arrow probably is the one that most is in need of getting back on track to what it can be and should be and was. And I think they will. I think they recognize that, and they're heading in the right direction. I think everybody recognizes the missteps from season 4. I feel like there's really not much need for any changes wholesale in the TV universe. Flash is exactly what Rebirth represents in the comics. Flash is about hope. Flash is about optimism. Flash is about legacy. So, Legends of Tomorrow as well. Maybe on Gotham, I can see where Rebirth may have an effect, because in all seriousness, I think there's a chance with Gotham to kind of refocus and hone in on the heart of these characters, and that Jim Gordon isn't just angry guy who yells and is angry all the time and sounds like Batman for some unknown reason.
Bullock is not a buffoon who can't get anything done. You know, there's nuance to these characters, and I think that this rebirth could perhaps bleed through into Gotham and focus the show more and kind of get it going and in a direction that's more positive. And I think that, at least in my eyes, I know a lot of people love the show. It's very successful, obviously. And then you look at the potential with Supergirl. Supergirl's already a show that's about hope and optimism. I think there's plenty of room for improvement there. And I think that we can get that through the Rebirth Initiative. So that's kind of my take. I don't think it'll be wholesale changes. I don't think that there will be any tangible effect from Rebirth crossing over. But what I think we will see is maybe a chance to improve some of these shows, but I don't think it'll be necessarily because of Rebirth.
Do you think maybe the inverse is true, that maybe these shows are what kind of helped kick off the idea of Rebirth?
I absolutely think so. I think that's a great point. I don't think that anybody at DC was fully prepared for the positive reaction to the Flash TV show that came out. Arrow was extremely successful and was responsible for kicking all this off, but Arrow's a very different kind of show. Arrow, at its best, is street level, and it's gritty, and it's visceral. The Flash came out, and it was a bit of a risk. It provided bright colors and daytime stuff and a family of characters.
Yeah, exactly. The sun exists in the DC universe?
Yeah, the sun. And my old enemy, the sun, by the way.
We're all pale here.
So it really shocked a lot of people, I think, and made them rethink this approach to superheroes of saying, maybe it's okay if we have them cracking jokes. Maybe it's all right if not everything is the end of the world and everything sucks. You know, like, it's okay to have the Flash smile and tell jokes and, you know, just be a man of the people. Same thing with Superman or whatever. I think that's a good point, Russell. I think that there's a big chance that these TV shows have had an impact on the Rebirth Initiative.
Jenny, you were a fan of the TV shows before you were watching the comics, so what was the transition like for you? Like, what? How did you feel like going from TV shows to comics, and did it feel like, you know, these two things could occupy, like, similar universes? Did it feel familiar to you whenever you came over, or was it like, oh my god, this is like night and day difference between these two?
It felt familiar, but I didn't try to fit in the TV version of the characters to the comic version of the characters. I tried to take my love of the TV shows and maybe hold them a little bit separately. You know, I realize they're separate entities. I know they're going to do different things and they're going to make different choices. I think it, the foundation for me being in the TV shows gave me a love of those characters and gave me a place to join, and Rebirth gave me a place to join into the comic books. So I was already, you know, I already loved Barry. I already loved Ollie. I had a crush on Rip Hunter. So it's given me a spot to go from a love of character to an understanding of character. And I can separate the two. You know, I can realize that this is, you know, the choices that they make differently. I think that, I mean, obviously the TV shows are going more Flashpoint than they are Rebirth, which I love. I love. That was the first thing in comics that, like, grabbed me the most was Flashpoint. And I know that's probably different for a lot of people that have a long, long history with these characters. They didn't maybe necessarily like Flashpoint.
No, I think that's fine. I think it kind of speaks to, like, those kids who were reading Crisis on Infinite Earths as, like, their first, that big entry point into the comics back in 86. That was the first true big reset of DC Comics continuity, and there were a lot of people who came on board with that, even though that, as an event, is one of the most all-encompassing and possibly one of the most confusing stories to just be dropped in the middle of. And Flashpoint, to me, seemed more coherent, at least as an entry point. So I don't think it's odd at all that that was your like first like real like comic entry point.
And that's it's so important. And this is a total non sequitur, but don't ever let comic book nerds try to shame you about what book is your favorite or what book is your gateway into comics. It's everybody's got a different one, and it's, you know, hell, you know, there's a sub community of people that you will find that do not like Hush as a story.
What?
No, I found it surprising too. But weird Hush people. Has always been my favorite Batman story.
That's
because it's
amazing.
The book that brought me, it's the book that made me a comic book fan again. If it weren't for that book, we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation.
I agree. I'm the same way.
But, you know, it's, yeah, that's crazy. But I was going to ask you, how quickly did it take you to adjust going from the screen to the comic book, knowing that you weren't going to be able to see shirtless Stephen Amell doing the salmon ladder?
Well, it's, you know, it's really, really sad that Barry doesn't look like Stephen Amell in the comic books. But that's okay. I can still see him on my screen. You know, I can still see him on Facebook. I can, you know, I can still get my fill of him. And
you know, pretty much all these dudes are drawn with, like, perfect bodies anyway. I mean,
yeah.
Like, Oliver Queen and Green Arrow as in the comic versus like Stephen Amell on Arrow is, you know, not that far off, honestly. Like, the physique is there. I think the one that surprised me the most was, even though Grant Gustin is totally in shape, I mean, he's lean and cut and everything, but if you just look at the dude whenever he's just walking around in normal everyday attire, you'd never know that. He just looks like a stick figure. He's built like a runner because that's, you know, he trained to look like somebody who runs all the time.
I agree. And I'm not so shallow as to say that, you know, that's the reason that I'm reading the comic books is because these guys look amazing. But
it's totally okay if it is.
You know, I'm not going to knock it. But I have high hopes. I have extremely high hopes for next season. With Flashpoint, I know they're not going to be able to do it the way that I want them to do it. I want me some Thomas Wayne. I want it so hard. But, you know, I don't know if they can do that or not.
I'll take some older Mr. Queen.
I don't know if I like that. But
Mr. Queen gets rid of dirt and grime and grease in just a minute.
I don't know.
Mr. Queen is stronger longer because there's ultra power in it.
And that was our plug. We will expect a check at some point in the near future. I mean, we plug all this stuff and they never pay us for it, Greg. It's starting.
I don't understand. I mean, we represent incredible products such as Vizio televisions. Vizio, the television that looks more clear than reality.
Exactly. Like, why are we not being paid for this?
Three references to Vizio, and they probably won't give me a check.
No sponsorship whatsoever for the Sellers Points podcast, only on Place to Be Nation Pop, because this is the place to be for your everything in your pop culture world, especially all of us like comic book nerds. I mean, this is your home. Don't act like you're too good for your home. There's my Happy Gilmore reference for the day. I've been trying to figure out how to work Bob Barker into this, but it's just not going to happen. You know, that's just how my mind works. I go off on these like weird directions. It's also kind of late at night as we're recording this, and
we are in full delirium mode as we talk about Rebirth.
It's really gotten to that point. I mean, if you guys are coming to this after you listened to the Hard Traveling Fanboys this past week, then you know how this goes.
You know what we've entered? We've entered the Garner Zone.
We have. Yeah. It has totally been garnered. It's all right.
The Andrew Garner delirium mode has been activated.
But I'm totally good with it. Well, now that we've kind of established that the TV shows might have actually had more of an effect on the comics than the comics have ever had on the TV shows, we got to talk about the big old elephant in the room, which is the DC movie universe.
DC movie.
The most divisive thing that DC's got going on right now is their film slate. And while they got two upcoming releases that both look real, real good, like Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman both look absolutely outstanding.
Magnifique.
Look like they're giving the people more of what they want.
You might say that drip, drip, drop, there goes an eargasm.
There it is.
Folks who.
Well done there, Greg. Well done.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Very much.
This is, I love this guy's humor. I never get tired of it. But yeah, we've hit that point where something is going to have to change for the DC films. Because Batman v Superman, as much as I enjoyed the film...
And Jennifer, you liked it too.
I loved it.
Yeah, and the ultimate cut is way better.
Yes.
More on my thoughts on that in an upcoming episode of The Hard Traveling Fanboys. That's right, I'm announcing it here. I'm a guest shot on that show.
Nice.
I have been invited. I'm going to be on the very next episode of Hard Traveling Fanboys Off the Page, where we're going to be talking Batman v Superman, the ultimate cut.
Ultimate edition, yep.
And, cue my jealousy.
It's going to be a hell of a lot of fun to get with Nick and Greg and talk about that, and I can't wait. But one of the things we're going to talk about here is not about... I'm not reviewing the movie for you. I'm going to do that later. You can find my original review on PlaceToBeNation.com.
.com, yep.
And I do have to amend it a little bit, because if you've been listening to my show... Know that Ben Morris and I had a good conversation on the Marvel podcast episode about my multiple viewings of the theatrical cut of Batman v Superman and how my initial feelings of it, of excitement, kind of wore off as I watched it more times, and it dropped from a 4-star movie to a 3 for me. The ultimate cut, different rating. I'll elaborate on the Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast. Huh, that's right. You got to wait. I'm not revealing it here.
Oh.
Sorry. I have avoided giving a full review of the movie on Twitter, on the podcast, anywhere, because I've been waiting to talk about it with Nick, because we've been talking about doing this for over a month now. That's right. We've been planning this for a while. You never know how much planning goes into our podcast. It may seem like I'm totally winging it and I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but actually, this is all... fairly organized. It just doesn't seem like it. But anyway, getting back to the point. We talked before the break about how Geoff Johns has shifted over to the film side and has kind of dropped out of the comic books for a bit. We all saw the critical reaction to Batman v Superman. To say it wasn't good might be a minor understatement. Critics didn't not enjoy this movie, and I would say the fandom was as divided over this as they were over Man of Steel, for different reasons on Batman v Superman than Man of Steel. Mostly in the tone that Batman v Superman set, because it was grim. It did not look at the world in a very optimistic way. At least not until like the very end of the movie, like the last few lines of the movie make it seem like there's some optimism to be found there. But you just sat through 2.5 hours of none. Like Superman trying to be optimistic and getting kind of like slapped down at every turn. A Batman who was so incredibly cynical that he has gotten to that point where he's become a killer. And of course, this version of Batman existing in a world where there has never been any other superheroes besides himself is probably another thing that put him on that path of becoming a killer eventually. But it's not like he's out there like wantonly killing every single criminal he comes across. But his respect for like life seems to have waned, if you will.
Yeah.
That is a well placed pun. That's the one I'm.
You might have just taught my hitching to the wagon for pun of the night.
I have been waiting to work that one in for so long, and there it is. It was there. I had to take it.
Well, credit to you, sir.
But anyway, we're not to get off on too much of my punniness. There could be a whole podcast of that. Seriously.
The place to be, pun spectacular.
Heard it here first.
Spectacular.
With guest stars Ben Morse, but he doesn't know that yet. He's going to agree to this, I think. I hope. Please. Anyway, we've got this negative reaction to Batman v Superman over its tone and some of the narrative problems that the theatrical version had, and it did have them. I can see where the editing problem lies, because it did have them. That's a legit criticism of that film. Some of the story and plot and the motivations of certain characters, they weren't fleshed out. They didn't really make a lot of sense. And it felt like the movie... You know, it felt like, as you're watching the theatrical cut, it's like, man, it feels like this movie should be longer. It feels like there's something missing from this. It feels like they took stuff out. Other things are completely disjointed. Something just needs to be fixed here. Like, it's like, maybe there is a good movie that was shot here, but we didn't get it. We didn't get it in the theater. We didn't get it in the initial release. I would say that... I don't want to spoil too much about what I'm going to talk about later, but the idea that there was a good movie in there, I think, is a valid point. It's still not quite there in the Ultimate Edition, but you can see elements that work and elements that don't. So, knowing all that, and knowing what we know about a recent press visit to the set of Justice League, it really seems like the people involved with these movies have listened to what a lot of the critics said and what a lot of the fans were saying, and are adjusting to these criticisms, to these complaints, at least to the ones that seem valid, that are like constructive criticism. But I see what's happening in the comics, and I know that, you know, Geoff Johns had his hands all over that. And now he's putting his hands all over the movies. So, what might Geoff Johns bring over? What, I think the better question for my panel here, for the two of you, what should Geoff Johns take from Rebirth, apply to Justice League, to The Flash, to Aquaman, to Green Lantern Corps, to Shazam, all the upcoming movies, of course, to the Batman solo film that's coming up, and likely a Man of Steel sequel. What should Geoff Johns and the filmmakers Zack and Debra Snyder, producers like Charles Roven, what should these people be taking from Rebirth and saying, all right, let's put these elements into the movie? Greg, what do you think should be the first thing that they take and put into this?
Well, the first thing is they should watch out about putting their hands all over the movies, because that is frowned upon in society. It is criminal in some jurisdictions, most jurisdictions at this point.
No does mean no.
No does mean no. But on top of that, I would like to see a general sense of... And I know it's a generic and broad term, but optimism brought into the big screen, because the part about Batman vs. Superman that worked the most for me, I mean, there's a lot of it that did work for me, but Wonder Woman was outstanding in the movie, because she was like the beacon of common sense and optimism and hope and just a shining sense of true heroism in a movie where at times the heroism was a little... lacking in terms of who is the real hero here and all that stuff.
The standing ovation she got at just about every showing I saw was a testament to how like sorely needed that type of heroism was in the movie.
Yep, and so I'm hoping that Geoff takes that, the elements that we saw in Wonder Woman, and spreads them into the other heroes, particularly Superman, because I think most of my issues... Batman vs. Superman, I enjoyed a lot of aspects of it, but I think my biggest issue, other than some technical filmmaking things, had to do with Superman, because he didn't feel very super in the movie. And I would like to see that shining figure of a guy who is no longer struggling to find his way in the world, but a Superman that we're seeing in the pages of Superman and Action Comics right now, a Superman who is the, as Ben Morris put it on a podcast I was on with him, just the best person. Just like a guy who, he's going to make mistakes, he's going to screw up, but he's always trying to do the right thing, what he believes to be right, and he knows the difference between right and wrong in his mind.
Precisely. It's not about him always doing the right thing. It's that he's trying.
Decisive.
He's decisive. He's making a decision, and he's sticking by it, because he knows what the right thing to do is. And even if the rest of the world disagrees with him, he's going to do it.
And he's not going to brood about it either.
No, no, no more no more super brooding. Right. Leave that
we
to
have,
Bruce Wayne.
We have Batman to brood, and we love that about Batman, that he broods. We don't want Superman
and
to
how
brood.
Good was Ben Affleck at the brooding?
Oh, he's great, man. And I would love to see elements of... One of the other things about Rebirth is you're seeing more well-adjusted heroes than we've seen in recent times. Like, Bruce Wayne is not
good
a raging...
Way to put it. Well-adjusted heroes. This is something that we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah. It's, you know, Bruce Wayne is never going to be what I would call well-adjusted after all the trauma. He's always going to have issues. But this is the most well-adjusted Bruce Wayne that we've seen. A Bruce Wayne who can't interact with people without being a complete... dick to them all the time.
Well, as Alfred said, he's always waiting for his stability.
Exactly.
Which is one of my, that's my favorite line of Batman number one that just came out was Alfred communicating to Bruce. He's like, yes, I'm perpetually waiting on your stability, sir.
And it's a sense of humor, too. Like when he has the back and forth with Alfred about, you know, when he tells Lucius, I think it is, that I don't even trust Alfred. And then when Bruce leaves, Alfred tells Lucius, he's like, when he was 10 years old, he asked me for a katana blade for sparring, and I got him some other different kind of blade or whatever. And he's like, he's never forgiven me, and he's been like that ever since.
That was that whole exchange was just the best. That illustrated exactly what I love about Alfred. Now, speaking of Alfred, in Batman v Superman, Jeremy Irons was great.
Oh, outstanding. Yeah, I had no doubt that he
I didn't either. Like, I went in knowing that Jeremy Irons was going to be a highlight, that he and Gal Gadot kind of steal the movie.
Affleck, too.
Yeah, Affleck brought it. Like, he, even if the movie surrounding him was not as well written or just as well realized as it should have been, he put his all into being Bruce Wayne, into being Batman. Like, he realized that take on Batman as well as anybody possibly could have. And he deserves credit for that. So much so to the point that they made him an executive producer on Justice League. And even by his own admission, it was because he had agreed to direct a solo Batman movie. And he's been given creative control over what happens with Batman. Because there's, as he said, going to be some overlap from Justice League to his solo movie.
Yeah, and back to the point of Rebirth and what I'd like to see brought on, this idea of that you see on the TV show of a shared universe in that, but the true version of a shared universe, because you don't have to have the same tone in everything. Arrow is a different tone than The Flash, is a different tone than Legends of Tomorrow, but they're in the same universe. They can interact with one another. And Jeff gets that and understands how to do that better than anybody. So I hope that he brings that into the movies, and so we can get a Flash movie that feels like a Flash movie.
Precisely.
And an Aquaman movie that feels like an Aquaman book. And a you know,
snozzberries that actually taste like friggin' snozzberries.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
I'm tired of these crappy knockoffs.
And most importantly of all, an actual Green Lantern movie. So
we've been waiting a long time, folks, and loyal listeners know exactly how we felt about that Green Lantern movie. How we all felt after seeing that. And no, I'm not placing the blame on Ryan Reynolds, just so you know, but at the same time, man, it's been a long wait to get any kind of Green Lantern news, and we don't have any. Like, they teased it in that CW special some months back before Batman v Superman even came out that there was going to be a Green Lantern Corps movie. That's the last we heard. But there's been nothing since. We have been waiting just with bated breath.
That and Shazam are the two movies that are kind of sitting out there with not much news
about.
That's
another one. Like, The Rock loves to tease how there's like stuff coming sooner than we think. Well, Rock, we all waiting, man. We're all sitting over here like, you've been talking about Shazam for the last, like, what, 3 years? When are we going to see something?
Like, Rock, you've been teasing me since I was in ninth grade, man. When you going to deliver?
Hey, I am a huge fan of the idea of Rock playing Black Adam. Whenever he announced that that was the role he had taken on, I was like, hell yes, give me that. But get on the ball, guys. Get somebody cast as Billy. Get somebody cast as Shazam.
Lee.
Like, get... Do something. Like, give us some kind of tidbit that's useful instead of just having Dwayne Johnson get on Twitter and say, yeah, we're totally doing this, and it's coming sooner than everybody thinks. And I was like, really? I hadn't seen anything, man. So you saying that means nothing to me.
Cast Arnold as Talkie Tawny so he can say, Billy! Billy! I knew that would get you, Russell.
That would be a great Predator callback, and I desperately need some of that.
I would love to see, but you know, all this thing. Other thing is, while I love to see all these elements brought in from Rebirth, I'd also like to clarify. I like dark superhero. I like serious superhero movies, and so I don't want them to over course correct either. But I think that there are ways to clean things up and to give more. Again, balance, the word balance, to bring that to not just the Force, but also to superhero movies. That's one thing that Marvel has done exceptionally well in their movie lineup is they've given us a goofy comedy in Guardians of the Galaxy. They've given us an espionage movie in The Winter Soldier. They've given us an intense hero versus hero thought-provoking battle in Civil War. They've given us, you know, pretty much across the board, lots of different genres of films now.
Genre?
Thank you. Genre. Of film, and I think that that's what DC needs to do, is they need to keep an open mind. Don't over-course correct. And you know, I'm not exactly wanting to see a campy Batman movie again or anything.
Just because Guardians of the Galaxy was successful doesn't mean Justice League needs to be that.
Suicide Squad, I think, is probably more akin to Guardians than what Justice League should ever
but
be.
With
you know,
dark gallows humor rather than
right.
Serious, like overly jokey joke type
slapstick
humor.
You know, I love Guardians, but Guardians worked because it was different from everything else, and it's time to, you know, there will be times to do that in DC movies as well, but it's, you know, you got to have variety in there.
Yeah. Getting from what you've seen out of Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman, the movies that we have gotten the most information about up to this point, which of those two are you really looking forward to the most? I mean, I think I know the answer to that one, considering you are wearing a Wonder Woman t-shirt right now. But when it comes to like the next one, let's talk about like Suicide Squad most directly, because that's the one that we're all going to see first. What's your initial impression of that movie just from the trailers and maybe not really knowing much about the team as it existed in the comics prior to this?
I don't know that much about the team, and I'm actually trying to separate myself from a lot of the media because, I mean, it's just everywhere. It's Suicide Squad everywhere that I look. And it's great. I mean, it's great. I'm super excited about the movie. I'm obsessed with the soundtrack. 21 Pilots, Heathens, their video ties into the movie. It's amazing. I'm obsessed with that song. I'm obsessed with Margot Robbie. I think she's going to be amazing. I think she's going to steal the show. But I'm trying not to go in there with a lot of preconceived notions. I want to be surprised. I want to be looking up, you know, things from the movie when I exit the theater. I want to be like, tell me more about this. I want to be, you know, coming fresh. I want to be fresh. This is my perspective on this. You know, I don't want to be, you know, trying to catch all the little details that I know you guys will do. And y'all will tell me about.
We're nerds. That's what we do.
Actually, it was issue 124 of Amazing Spider-Man. I'll have you know.
I just want to be entertained by a damn comic book movie. I mean, that's all. I just want it to be fun. I want it to be different. I want it to be badass. And I think it will be.
And that's all any of us ask for. I think whenever, I mean, be you longtime comic book nerd or be you, like, fresh off the boat. Or fresh on the boat. I don't really know how this works.
I think fresh off the boat is a short-lived series on ABC.
I like that series. Thank you.
I never got to watch it.
It was great. It was.
I wanted to watch it. I never got around.
That's one I've actually never heard of, so I'm lost here.
It's super good. I like it a lot.
Super good. Okay, I'll take that recommendation.
But, you know, when it, going back to Batman vs. Superman, there was a lot. It felt heavy because that's what the movie was trying to do. Like, they were trying to put all of these consequences on Superman. They were basically holding him accountable for the things that had happened previously. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what is happening in our world. I mean, in the real world. You know, we're trying, everybody's trying to, you know, say who's to blame for this and who's to blame for that. And Superman was in the crosshairs of that. So I think that's where a lot of that weight from that movie comes from. Them trying to, you know, make him accountable for things that he didn't necessarily deserve. And I don't know, it's not a Debbie Downer movie. It's just a realistic movie. I think it's what would realistically happen if there was a for real Superman. He would be blamed for these things.
And it's to Nick Duke. I love that he kept making this point when the movie came out. He said, yes, it is a dark movie. It is more grim than your typical superhero fare, but you know, folks, it ain't Schindler's List, so let's not say that it's something that it isn't, and overly criticize the movie because it didn't turn out to be Guardians of the Galaxy or it didn't turn out to be Avengers. Like, it's completely different type of movie, and different doesn't equal bad, but in a lot of people's minds, I think in a lot of critics' minds, it actually does. Like you say, different, it equals bad. And
I would agree.
I don't understand that.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I don't get it. I
had my problems with the movie, and I don't think I enjoyed it as much as y'all did, but my reasons are a lot less to do with the tone and a lot more to do with other aspects, editing, pacing, things like that. But as far as like the tone, I mean, I don't understand. Why would you want every movie to be the same?
I don't get that either.
I mean, that's a misnomer about the Marvel movie. The Marvel movies are not all the same. No. I mean, Civil War was not like any other Marvel movie I've seen. I mean, it was different. Guardians was certainly different than, I mean, you had a freaking talking raccoon, for God's sake. You know, you can make different movies. The Nolan Batman trilogy is nothing like the Richard Donner Superman movies, mm-hmm. although they're held to be high standards. They're nothing. They're not even remotely similar. They can never occupy the same universe. You know what I mean?
The crazy thing is that a lot of fans regard both of those movies as like the definitive Batman and the definitive Superman.
And I get that, and that's cool. But they're different. That just illustrates the fact that it's okay to be different. And you don't superhero movie in quotes does not mean one kind of movie. It's the superhero quote genre actually genre. Encompasses many different genres across.
And you know, I think we're to that point now where people are going to have to make that decision of, want all of your superhero movies to be exactly the same thing, or is there room at the table for some difference? And in some cases, some big difference. And maybe a Superman movie is not the place to have a super dark and like foreboding tone. Like if you did that as a straight Batman movie, Yeah, totally fits.
And that's something that I came to terms with, is it works a lot better if you view it as a Batman movie.
Which I did anyway.
Yeah, the theatrical cut certainly feels like a Batman movie.
Yes.
The Ultimate Edition is far more balanced and nuanced in its treatment, because as I was watching the Ultimate Edition, it didn't add anything new for Batman. I mean, you saw all of Batman's scenes in the theatrical cut, but the Superman and especially the Clark stuff got fleshed out by a lot. And Lois gets a whole new subplot that was cut completely from the movie that shouldn't have been, because it's not just about her and Clark. It finally fleshed out Lex Luthor the way that he should have been, because, I mean, Lex was the person who was most underserved by the theatrical cut, as it turns out.
That's another aspect of the movie that sticks in my proverbial craw, would be the Luthor portrayal, but that's another topic for another time, which we'll get to in a
future podcast.
I do. One thing I would like to say is, I also think one misstep that DC made is, I think that there were a lot of people, including myself, that feel that they should have done a Superman sequel before doing Batman vs. Superman.
I think that's fair.
Because I don't think – I didn't have enough connection with Superman to feel any sadness when he died because I haven't seen him be super. I saw him struggle in Man of Steel and finally become Superman at the end, and I'm like, okay, now I get to see him be Superman – and instead, I don't because it's really a Batman movie.
And
that's true.
And I feel like I disagree with some of the people who said that we should have had a solo Batman movie before we got Batman v Superman. I disagree with that completely.
Yeah, Batman.
What you need though is a proper Man of Steel sequel. You need an actual second Superman movie that shows him being
Superman,
like really show him being Superman, being confident, like being out there in the world, and then you could totally make Batman v Superman almost as it was, and it would. At least feel earned. It would feel
right.
Like we got there
earned is a great word. Yeah.
In a natural progression. It would have made more sense. But
Man of Steel showed us who Clark was. We didn't get a chance to see who Superman was.
We really needed that Superman movie. Like they should have just done a second Superman movie rather than jumping straight to Batman v Superman. Like then you could have done Batman v Superman like, as your third film. Like,
yep. Agreed.
But moving forward, I mean, they are moving forward. I mean, regardless of the feelings about Batman v Superman, it made money. It made a pretty good bit of money. Now, Justice League is probably going to have a slightly smaller budget. We know that Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman don't have that gigantic budget that Batman v Superman had, but they don't need it. They won't be held to that same standard.
And one of the things that both of those movies show... from the previews anyway that we've seen, they both look like they're different from one another.
Very.
And also Batman versus Superman.
I almost felt like when I watched the trailer for Suicide Squad and then I look at the trailer or what little bit of footage we get for Wonder Woman, I'm like, man, some of this almost feels like it doesn't take place in the same universe. Like they feel so different from one another. But then I see Ben Affleck's Batman pop up over in Suicide Squad and it's a stark reminder that yeah, these are occupying same universe. That's actually, I think, going to be a potentially dangerous juggling act they're pulling there. But at the same time, I also think that it could be absolutely brilliant. It could be the true separation of the DC Cinematic Universe or the DC Extended Universe from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, there's the real difference. They're not afraid to really jump. Genre. That's our favorite word ever.
Yes.
Do you feel like DC is more reactionary on their fans? Like they listen to their fans and then they make decisions based on those things?
Reactionary, yes. Listening to their fans, no.
Okay. Because it seems like, okay, they had Suicide Squad and then... Batman v Superman did what it did, and then they went back for some reshoots, and then they were like, well, we're tweaking this, and I feel like they're kind of riding the wave of public opinion, you know, when they come to make their films, and I don't want that. I want them to make their films. You know, don't make your films based on how people are reacting to
them. Their producers, and especially not so much the producers or the people that are necessarily making the movies, but the executives at the top part, the people that we don't actually necessarily know the names of, I think spend far too much time on Twitter trying to listen to the onslaught of comments that come in at them. And
they also spend far too much time trying to keep up with the Joneses.
They do.
Yes. Like, since when is $1 billion, like,
the Joneses?
The thing. I don't understand why that's a thing.
It's a ridiculous metric by which to measure a superhero movie, because only six superhero movies now have actually crossed the $1 billion mark. Mm-hmm. And there have been how many made since... since early 2000, like since 2000 when X-Men really launched this thing?
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about them. You've got Avengers, Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises, Iron Man 3, Civil War.
And Avengers Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron. That's six movies, if I'm not missing any. That's six movies
that
have
crossed
the $1 billion
mark. That's it.
if that's what you're holding every movie to that comes out, you're never going to be satisfied.
And look at the negative reaction that Iron Man 3 gets on Twitter and everywhere else. People dump all over that movie. And
I love that.
And it made $1 million.
People get mad because they got tricked. That's what I believe.
Well, but like, why?
But if word of mouth was really so bad, if it was really the metric by which would destroy a film, then how did Iron Man 3 ever get to $1 billion after, you know, its opening weekend?
Three words, Robert Downey Jr.
Well, fair enough. the guy's a box office draw. He's going to make your movie.
He's going to kill it every time.
And critics love the like,
it's
critics
amazing.
Adored it, but fans, comic book fans, still react to it.
The critics really loved Iron Man 3. I mean, they made it a fresh rated movie, but it's kind of weird that, you know, Iron Man 3 is highly fresh rated, but Watchmen is not.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second. Like, Watchmen is actually a fairly brilliant movie.
Roger Ebert gave it 4 stars.
He did. Like, it's one of those, and it's a Zack Snyder movie. And I really don't think that there's necessarily anti-DC bias from critics. There are some people who have claimed that. They've said that there's an anti-DC bias floating around there. And I don't even think it's anti-Warner Brothers. I do think it's anti-Zack Snyder. I think that he rubbed somebody the wrong way somewhere along the lines, and he's been getting slammed ever since. Is it fair? No. Are there fair criticisms you can make about Zack Snyder movies? Oh, yes.
Just like any movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
He is not a perfect filmmaker. He has made a couple of movies that I would say weren't quite all that great. And I'm going to be controversial here because I know it's a popular movie with a lot of people, but I think 300 is actually one of the weakest moments of Zack Snyder's career. I know that it established that visual style that he would go on to use in later films, but honestly, it doesn't age well. It may have given us Gerard Butler, but honestly, is that really a prize? Look at the guy's body.
Yeah.
Jenny's just looking at his body. I'm asking you to look at his body.
I'm just saying. In that movie, yeah.
I go back and forth on that one. I've said this many times because this is a controversial statement on my part. I think other than Sucker Punch, which is the worst movie that he's done in my opinion, I think Batman vs. Superman is the second worst movie that he's done because I like all of his other movies a lot. Like I like 300, which I go back and forth on 300. But I love Dawn of the Dead.
I think when you see the Ultimate Edition of Batman v Superman, you'll up the ranking of that one a little bit. Sucker Punch, I don't know that anything can really save that movie. I've never actually seen it. No.
Oh, I watched it on HBO. It's bizarre. It's just almost impossible to keep up with for me anyway. It was all over the place.
It looked like a kind of a fever dream.
That's how I
took the previews of it. But like I said, I've never seen it, so I can't judge fully what it is.
I've talked before about Zach tends to do his best work when he's adapting an existing story or adapting someone else's work. When he's on his own devices.
Dawn of the Dead being the most prominent example of that, I
yes,
think.
Yes, Watchmen
and
as
Watchmen,
well.
Of course. The ultimate cut of Watchmen is a brilliant bit of filmmaking.
Yeah, he's so visually adept at making a movie. But sometimes when he's on his own, he can get lost in the wilderness a little bit.
He seems
but,
that way in interviews, too. Like when I listen to him talk, I'm like, man, he's a little off his block, isn't he? He needs somebody to rein him in.
It's a lot like our podcast.
It is. It's a lot like my podcast. I am the Zack Snyder of Place to Be Nation Pop.
This is the least action-packed Zack Snyder thing that's ever been made.
Isn't it?
We don't have the budget for explosions, folks.
I chase rabbits better than anybody. I will go down that rabbit hole so fast, and you will never see me again, you hope. But anyway, trying to get back on topic here, because we know that Zack is kind of – he's not necessarily, I guess, the shepherd of – Extended Universe, but he is involved in all the movies, and we had it revealed recently that when the Wonder Woman synopsis came out, that the story was written partly by Zack Snyder and by Geoff Johns. This is something that was a surprise to a lot of people because they didn't know that those two guys were so involved in the movie. I mean, I knew that Geoff Johns was because he and Patty Jenkins, the director of Wonder Woman, have a really fun banter back and forth on Twitter occasionally. Like, they are just getting along so well. Apparently, she really liked working with him. So I'm thinking, you know, if Jeff is making directors happy and is, you know, in there like writing screenplay dialogue, like not necessarily dictating where the story goes, but he's writing, you know, dialogue pieces and maybe helping set scenes in certain ways, because I mean, that's what a screenplay writer does. Could this be, you know, the first salvo? That could Wonder Woman really be the first salvo in that new direction that they've been talking about? Like, what do you guys think we're going to see out of Wonder Woman, and what effect do you think Geoff Johns is gonna bring to that table?
I think we're definitely going to see an outstanding soundtrack, because I'm obsessed with her theme. I love it so much. And I, you know, I'm curious about the dynamic between those two, you know, especially writing. Who's the head honcho? You know, is it Zach? I don't know.
It's a good question.
It's a dick measuring contest, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, I've not ever come across anything Geoff Johns that I have not liked. So there's that.
It's hard to find anything that he didn't just nail it with. I mean, maybe his brief stint on Avengers. Maybe that.
Ben Morse would disagree, because Ben has told me that he thinks that run is underrated, actually. But
oh, no, he mentioned that on the Marvelous Marvel episode of Sellers Points Podcast. You got to go back and listen to that. Ben Morse dropped all sorts of good Marvel good knowledge, including Geoff Johns' brief stint with Marvel, which he is a fan of. Like, he really liked having Jeff at Marvel.
What do you think about the potential chemistry, since presumably Chris Pine is playing Steve Trevor in this movie?
Yep.
How do you think that's gonna be pulled off?
Well, I saw how Gal Gadot was with Ben. It was, you know, you were drawn to them together. Mm-hmm. I could definitely see her pulling that off with Chris Pine. I mean, he has a presence. It's not Ben Affleck presence, but you know, I could see it. I'm looking forward to it. I want to ship them. I want, you know, I want to fall in love with them.
Well, they're a classic comic book couple too.
Right. Like
Steve Trevor and Wonder Woman is a real thing. Like, that's a big comic book couple. Maybe not necessarily as well known as, say, like Clark Kent, Lois Lane, but I mean, I would certainly place them in that same category.
And as far as the next year or two of comic book movies, that's the one I'm looking forward to the
me
most.
Too.
I'm so excited about that.
That's the top of the list for me. Even more so than Suicide Squad, which I'm really pumped for. Like,
I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think Suicide Squad's going to surprise some people. I think that we're in for something that we didn't expect. But
and I hope for certain individuals with the initials J-E that may be listening, I hope that this will finally prove once and for all what should have never been forgotten, that Will Smith's a bad mama jamma.
Hells yeah.
And an awesome actor.
I agree.
This should put him back in the A-list, I'm hoping, because he deserves it. He's awesome.
But I don't want it to be overhyped. That's what I'm afraid of with that movie. I'm afraid the hype is too much. That's why I've kind of been hands-off on this. I'm not reading the Entertainment Weekly articles. I'm not, you know, obsessing over this movie. I don't want to go into it with all that hype.
I haven't watched many of the TV spots. I know they've released, like, dozens of them, and they're doing the same thing to this movie that...
And Comic-Con will be insane with...
Oh, yeah, Comic-Con's going to be blowing up with all the Suicide Squad stuff, and Wonder Woman is going to be big there, too.
Yes.
And what I'm hoping for out of that is we got to get a trailer, man. We got to get that Wonder Woman trailer.
Yeah.
Even if it's just a little thing, I don't care. Give us something.
That theme music.
Oh, yes. I am totally with you, Jenny, because I think Suicide Squad is going to be great, but I'm always weary of just keeping up with all this information of a movie, because I did that with Green Lantern, and that's one of the things that hurt that movie so much for me, was I was so invested in every little bit of news that came out, and I hyped it up in my head, and I bought into every early review of a fan screening that came out to talk about how great it was. And it was the same kind of thing with Batman vs. Superman, where it kind of, the level of hype in my head exceeded what the movie could match. And
it's tough. So I'm hoping that, but I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be cool. And again, like I said, Will Smith, I believe in him. He's going to deliver.
And
Fresh Prince, yeah.
And going forward, last point on the movies. What is it that these movies all need to like? We've kind of talked about what they've need to learn from the past here. What needs to be in these movies in the future? Like specifically, which of those movies that we haven't seen anything on yet are you most excited for? And what think needs to be brought to the table specifically, like by Geoff Johns and the idea of the rebirth effect on that movie? Like pick a movie that is on the film slate and talk a little bit about what you want to see in it. Any particular story you want to see adapted or just used as a background. Greg, I see you itching over there. Go for it, buddy.
Green Lantern. Green Lantern Corps, Green Lantern Corps, Green Lantern Corps. How many times do I need to say Green Lantern Corps? Green Lantern Corps, Green Lantern Corps. Because Geoff Johns is the best Green Lantern writer of all time. I don't care what anybody says. It's not even close.
It's not.
I want a Green Lantern movie that represents and brings to the table the stuff that Geoff Johns brought to the table with Green Lantern. The ideas that the 2011 movie tried to hit on but missed the mark on. I want the core. I want the diversity of the core. I want Hal Jordan. I also want Jon Stewart. I want Guy Gardner. I want Kyle Rayner. I want Jessica Cruz. I want Simon Baz. I want Kilowog. I want Soren Ignatiu. I want the little mushroom lantern. I want the umbrella lantern. I want
work Green in this.
Yes. Yes. I want Rotlop Fan. I want the beauty and the diversity of Green Lantern Corps brought to the screen, because there should be a Green Lantern for everyone. If you're not a Hal Jordan fan, you can be a Jon Stewart fan. If you're not a Jon Stewart fan, you can be a Guy Gardner fan. Represent. If you're not a Guy Gardner fan, you can be a Jessica fan. I want to see a movie that
you can
reflects
just love all the lanterns because they all bring something to the table.
Yep. I want a movie that reflects what Green Lantern is as a concept, which is the idea that it is a team of space cops going out being weird aliens and getting in weird adventures and doing things that you can't see other heroes do. Because again, not harping on a certain movie, but Green Lantern is not like Superman. He's not Batman. He's not Spider-Man. He's not Iron Man. These characters are all distinct from one another, and when you try to put Green Lantern in a box and make him just a hero who finds a ring, who goes around and fights crime, he's just like everybody else. And that's not what makes the character awesome. That's not what makes the mythos awesome. So that's the movie I want to see the most, and that's the movie that I want to see made well the most, and the one that I want to see Geoff Johns most involved in personally. So
I'm going to say I want to see an amazing villain, whether it be Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, whatever it is. I want an amazing villain. I might get that with the Joker and Suicide Squad. I want somebody that is so freaking terrible that I love him so much because he's so terrible.
Sinestro.
I was going to say Sinestro would fit that bill, but
we arguably haven't had that in a DC movie.
I agree.
Since the Nolan movies.
Yeah.
So.
Bane was amazing.
We've never had it.
Exactly. I love Loki. But that's what I want. I want the big bad. You know, I want something that they can go deeper into and not just give me a surface bad guy and give me a great bad guy.
We haven't had a definitive, like, big bad villain. You know who needs to be that in the DC Extended Universe? Darkseid.
Darkseid needs
to come in with the thunder. And
They need to really make him menacing, too.
Yep.
To capture the arrogance and the menace of Darkseid.
It's like, you're gonna,
because I don't like it, but I respect they've got their take on Luthor, and that's what they're going to do. But now, all right, you got your goofy villain. Give me my freaking menacing villain.
Exactly. That's what I want.
They need to do that with Steppenwolf, too. Like, they really want to sell us on him as the villain of the first Justice League movie. He needs to be that.
Steppenwolf needs to take us on a magic carpet ride. That's what he needs to do.
I like your phrasing. for some odd reason, I think I'm on board with it. I mean, it may look flimsy, but it can fly really fast. Seriously, like, I've seen Aladdin multiple times. What a magic carpet can do. It's kind of scary. But before this unravels any further, this is an Aladdin. I'm kind of on board with both of you guys. Like, we need a good villain. We need somebody who, like, really just pops. And I think supposedly Wonder Woman is the gateway to Justice League. At least that's the way that it's described by Zack Snyder and by a lot of people involved with the filmmaking process. So I'm thinking we may actually see Steppenwolf pop up in Wonder Woman.
Perhaps we'll see some of the other apocalyptic villains,
yeah,
too.
Like, I mean, they're...
Granny goodness, perhaps?
They're talking about, you know, all this Jack Kirby influence on Justice League, and if you're going to go there, you might as well dive in all the way, because if you can't really be all that nuanced when it comes to the Kirby side of either Marvel or DC.
Calibac, Lashina, granny goodness!
Exactly, like, got to go all the way with the Kirby universe if you're going to do it at all, because if you don't, there was no point. Can't just take a little bit here, a little bit there. I mean, you've already dropped Parademons on us. Might as well see that whole thing. Like, bring me Apocalypse. Like, show me that planet. Don't be afraid to show the other side of it either, because the new gods aren't just Apocalypse and Darkseid. There's also, you know, Highfather, Orion.
New Genesis.
All the stuff on Genesis. Yeah. Like, you got to show me all that. I mean, if you're going to do one, you can't have one without the other. They go hand in hand. So,
like love and marriage.
Yep.
Go together like a horse and carriage.
This, I tell you, brother.
Can't have one without the other, that's for sure.
That is your Married with Children moment for the day. Go watch that show. It's great. All you kids out there who never saw it, go experience some...
Ow!
That was the moment.
Sorry, I've been hanging out with Greg too much.
Yep.
There's really no such thing. But moving on to... You know, we talked a little bit about the future. We know that... you know, we know a pretty good bit of information from that Justice League set visit. That revealed a lot more than I expected it to. Loved what I heard out of it. Everybody seemed very enthusiastic.
Ezra Miller.
Yeah, Ezra Miller seems to be the guy that's going to steal the show. Everybody's talking about him as Flash, so I'm pretty pumped for that, honestly. I think that Flash is going to be the movie to beat when it comes out if things continue this way. And if things continue on as they've been described, then, you know, Flash is going to steal the show when Justice League comes out. And I fully expect Gal Gadot to continue being an amazing Wonder Woman, and for Ben Affleck's Batman to, you know, be more fully realized. I mean, the real big question mark, as we've said, is Superman. What are you going to do to bring him up to the level that he needs to be at for people to really latch on to him as the focal figure of this film series? Because, I mean, Man of Steel kicked this off. It was Superman's universe to begin with. So it's time to place him at the head of the table where he belongs, but do it the right way. Do it in a way that endears him to people, which is something that has not really happened yet, even though I feel like they got close with Man of Steel, and that is my favorite Superman movie. I still feel like it hasn't hit the way that it needs to, and if they're really serious about learning their quote-unquote lesson of these last couple of movies, that's your big, big project. You've got to get this right. You've got to get Superman correct, because you're so close with everybody else. It looks like you're nailing it with Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman, Flash, all of that. But for the love of holy fuck, get Superman right.
Well, that's a tall order in a movie that's going to have to introduce you to so many other characters.
True.
You know, to have to go back on a character that's already had two movies. You know, are they really going to give him that time? Are they going to focus more on the Flash, Cyborg?
I don't necessarily feel like it's necessarily giving him time so much as it's giving him a comeback moment that feels earned. That feels like Superman is back. Like, this is...
Do you think you can do that in a concise way in the beginning?
I wouldn't do it at the beginning of Justice League. I wouldn't bring Superman back until like maybe the third act.
Really?
I would leave Superman dead for the majority of the film.
I like that.
I don't think it works if you bring him back immediately. I think that it feels cheap. It would make his death in Batman v Superman meaningless.
If I may be so bold, I would suggest that those who are crafting the Justice League film and the future of the DC Extended Universe, and again, at the risk of sounding like too much of a fanboy for the DC Animated Universe, I would suggest that they look to the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited cartoons for a way to portray the dynamic. Just not necessarily forget about plot or any of that other stuff. Look to it for the dynamics between the big three, between Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, of how to handle the interactions between them to make Superman feel like he belongs with these two characters that on the surface may appear, quote, more interesting, but make him seem like the ultimate hero of the piece.
Yeah, he's the central figure of DC Comics.
They all play a key role.
They do. We talk about the Trinity, and we all know that Batman is the biggest selling hero at DC, and we all know that Wonder Woman's profile has been raised significantly in the last couple of years. And that as much as Batman v Superman may have hurt the profile of Superman, it raised Wonder Woman's significantly to the point where she's making all sorts of new fans. But DC's got to, Warner Brothers has especially got to embrace this idea that Superman is your first. He is the center of that universe, or at least he should be. He is the one that started it. This is where, as far as I am concerned, the universe begins and ends with Superman. You've got to put him in that central point, and you've got to make it feel like something people can connect to. And if anybody can really get how to make Superman work like that on film again, it is Geoff Johns. He is the guy that I would want fighting that battle, putting that together. It just feels like, you know, this is for him. But we're going to move on to our final point, the final bit of this podcast. Before we say goodbye, what should DC learn from the recent success of Rebirth, and how should it be applied across the board? And on that note, do you feel like Marvel can learn anything from this and apply it to their own lineup? And as your final closing remark, what do you see in DC's future? Do you think they're on the right track now? Are you feeling optimistic? Are you feeling like trepidatious? Like what? Where are you in the big grand scheme? So I know that's a lot to take in as a single questionnaire, but Jenny, I'm going to let you start.
Obviously, I'm still all in. I'm still a newbie and still going. I've added books to my pull list because of Rebirth. I just read my first Nightwing book. I added Batgirl and the Birds of Prey to my list, and it hasn't even come out yet. So I'm still all in. I think they need to use this momentum, get people like me into their comic book shops, into the comic book shops, picking up the books, and it will all trickle down eventually, I think. On the plus side, there are people who don't want to read the books. You still have your whole TV universe, which I'm still all in for. So they've kind of got me hook, line, and sinker across the board. Just give me more of all of those things.
She abandoned you. She's on our team now.
Yeah, and it's weird. It's so weird to me still because I've always been Marvel, always X-Men, always Iron Man, and this whole thing is still so weird to me. But I am still all in. I don't have a Marvel comic book. Give me an entry point. That's what I will say to Marvel. Give me an entry point. Do something where I can feel included into this thing. I watched both seasons of Daredevil. I watched Jessica Jones. I didn't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or the other one, Agent Carter. But give me something like Rebirth that it doesn't have to reset anything, but give me somewhere to start. And, you know, I know I can pick up at any point, you know, in some of these things and still do it. But there's a welcomeness to Rebirth that I have felt, especially from the fandom in general, that has encouraged me instead of discouraged me.
You hear that, fandom? You did something right.
And, I mean, a lot of that goes to you two. I mean, you know, you guys are who I go to if I have questions or if I want to know how are you reading that way? Where do you point me? And then, you know, whatever. And I want to get there with some Marvel titles too, but I don't have that hook yet.
I'm so proud right now.
Yep, and I've resisted the urge to recommend you to read The Rock number 1 from 2001.
Well, that resistance just ended.
I have interested in Alias, because I know that's kind of one of the...
That's Nick's jam.
Yeah.
That's a Jessica Jones book.
A darker kind of thing.
Very, very dark.
Yeah, I am interested in the mature of X-Men, because I know they have a whole genre of...
She's picking up on it.
Of the darker stuff, I do kind of want to gravitate towards that.
For me, I am very optimistic about where DC. I've not been this optimistic in many years, actually, about comics, because I've mentioned this several times in recent weeks. But my pull list has never been bigger than it is right now for how many single issue comics I'm getting. Because as everybody knows that knows me, I prefer to read and trade. I always have, always will, but there are books coming out now that I just can't wait on. I can't resist reading them when they come out, and there's so many of them. Will it last? Will this optimism last? I hope so. I don't know. I'm sure some of these books will get worse as they get older. Some of these books will get better as they go on. And as far as what I would like to see Marvel take out of it, I think a general approach would be to a simplification. It would be the best way for me to describe it. All the Rebirth titles right now, I would have no problem recommending a new reader to pick them up and try them out as an entry point. And because they're all about character first. In Marvel, there are some books that are like that, that are on the fringes. They're all on the fringes. Old Man Logan, The Vision, things like that. But if you look at the main core Marvel titles, your Spider-Mans, your Iron Mans, things like that, it just seems like everything's always caught up in a perpetual cycle of these massive events that are wrapped in continuity and wrapped in seven different layers of characters that are so far off from their initial characterization that now they're not really recognizable anymore.
And it's daunting for somebody.
Daunting, because you can't go in and say, you can't go in as somebody that loves the movies and say, all right, Captain America's awesome. I'm going to pick up a Captain America book. And then you read it, and it's totally different than you're expecting. Or Iron Man, or The Hulk, for Pete's sake. You know, Thor. It's all different, and it's all...
Rest in peace, Bruce Banner.
What was that, Russell?
Rest in peace, Bruce Banner. We will miss you.
Yes, and, you know, you've got all these different things that are so far off the beaten path, and it's fine to do that, but I think that it's also confusing for new readers. It throws you into a tailspin of trying to figure out why people are behaving the way they are and what these things represent, what these events that are being referenced are. Rebirth has allowed a bit of a refocus of who are these characters and why do we care about them in the first place? And I would love to see that as a line-wide thing for Marvel, and hopefully that'll come soon. But again, the Marvel books that I'm most interested in right now are the ones that are on the fringes, the ones that are less affected by the massive crossovers, the ones like the... And I like crossover events too, by the way. I just don't like it when it's perpetual, constant. So, you know, I would like to see maybe take a break from the every few months crossover and maybe give it about a year. Give it a year, and then that way when you come back and do another massive crossover, it'll mean something.
Yeah, I mean, events need to feel earned. And Rebirth was one that felt earned whenever we got to it. And if you felt like it didn't feel earned once you read it, you certainly did. Marvel hasn't had that in years. It's just one event leading to another event leading to another event. It's like it's that cycle like you were talking about, Greg. It just never seems to end. And it's been this way since the original Civil War. It's like one it might not be a line wide event, but it does like feel like the main core characters that they focus on go from one event to the next, and that might sell books, and it does. They sell, but it doesn't make them great. You know, we need something like that for Marvel to happen, and I hope it does. I hope that they get back to a more character focus, because that's what's happened with DC. They've gotten very character focused. They've gotten back to the core of what makes these characters endearing to the fans in the first place. Character first, plot second. And you know what? That is a great way to tell a story. And that, my friends, is a great way for us to bring this edition of Sellers Points to a close. We thank you for sitting here with us for what has probably been about another 3-hour podcast, because that's just how we roll. And I want to say you can find us on Twitter. Greg, tell them your Twitter handle.
I am at G Phillips. That's GPHILLIPS 8652.
And you can find me at Russell, that's RUSSELL _ Sellers, SELLERS. You guys, I don't know what you can do for Jennifer because she's not on Twitter.
I'm on Instagram. Madre D. Ethan, MADREDEETHAN.
So go harass her into getting on Twitter because she totally needs to join.
Boo. I'm trying to harass y'all to get on Instagram.
Twitter.
We ain't pretty enough for Instagram.
I'm not either.
So we're not gonna do that. I don't think. You can also find you can find Place to Be Nation Comics group on Facebook. It's an open group. Come on in, join.
We have good fun convos in there.
We do. We've been having a great time talking about all this stuff. You can find, of course, this podcast and all of our great Place to Be Nation podcasts over at placetobenation.com. You can also find it on iTunes. Find it on the PTBN Pop feed over at Podbean, as well as the regular Place to Be Nation podcast feed on Podbean. Big shouts, of course, again to the Hard Traveling Fanboys. Thanks for lending me one half of you for another episode.
It was my pleasure, true believer.
Jennifer, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
We'll have both of you guys back again in future broadcasts. I am absolutely sure that we're going to be following this up. Maybe we'll come back in a year's time and take a look at how Rebirth is doing a little bit longer down the road and kind of compare it to now. And, of course, there was a surprise run-in from Chewbacca, who just wanted to stick his head in and say hello, and he has quickly moved on. But we thank you, Chewie, for showing up. It wouldn't be a complete show without you. With that, again, go to placetobenation.com. Check out all the great podcasts. You've got great stuff like Todd Weber's Conversations, Hard Traveling Fanboys, The Lucha Undead, Imaginary Stories, tons of great comics content, and of course the premier comics podcast of Place to Be Nation, Sellers Points. That's me.
And that's he.
You have been listening to another fantastic, overly long, possibly kind of my God, does he ever shut up moment podcast. And with that, we're out. Thank you for joining us. We will see you guys next time.
Someone else to blame. All the holes and answers that are clearly showing. But something to fill the space was all of the time I spent a waste. So many choices point the same way. I